under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, would you read changes to the agenda, please?
Addendum to item number 17. This item adds the appropriate reference to the resolution that certifies the EIR and approves the Napomo Park Master Plan. The recommendation is amended to read as follows. It is recommended that your board approve the resolution to 1. Certify the Napomo Community Park Master Plan Final Program Environmental Impact Report in accordance with the provisions of the California Environmental Quality Act, Public Resources Code Section 21000, and 2. Adopt the Napomo Community Park Master Plan. Added item to consent, a submittal of a resolution congratulating Deputy County Fire Chief Rick Swan upon his retirement from CAL FIRE after 32 years. Requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement.
Very good. Thank you. Today is Election Day. If you haven't voted, I encourage you all to be sure and do so before polls close this evening at 8 p.m. The first item on our agenda this morning is the consent agenda. And I will open it to the public for comment on items on consent. I have one request to speak, Mike Brown.
This morning you have the annual report of the Civil Service Commission. I'm Mike Brown representing CoLab, and you have that report, which is an annual report, and I think the report's a good report. It doesn't show any significant problems in terms of friction in the staff or a lot of appeals from discipline. But I think it's interesting that report, you know, is part of a very long tradition that goes way back to the end of the 19th century to promote merit in government and, you know, the idea that people who are appointed to positions are hired because of their education, experience, and qualifications for the job or for promotions, and that's been a venerable and successful part of the American reform movement. But I think over a century, some of the actual merit content has been lost, and I think one of the illustrations and an opportunity for you and the administration here is that you have 612 separate and distinct position classes in your merit system, and that's for 2,400 employees. So what's happened over the decades is a system of very short pay ranges with steps with very specific and narrow classes has risen and perpetuated itself in most systems throughout the country, and there's an opportunity, I think, to review that, look at broader position classes, which would give you flexibility to manage and provide longer pay ranges and so forth. So I just think that this would be an opportunity. You know, there's an awful lot of discussion and bashing of unions and so forth around right now. But the true reform and reinvigorating of merit systems is a management system under your control. So it's an opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. That concludes the request to speak on the consent items. I'll bring it, close public comment, bring it back to the board, and ask my colleagues if there are any items they would like to speak to. Supervisor Gibson.
I don't, sir.
Supervisor Hill.
None, thank you.
Supervisor Meacham.
None, thank you.
And Supervisor Teixeira.
None, thank you, Chairman Patterson.
And I'm good as it is, so I'll seek a motion on consent.
Move to approve the consent calendar as amended.
Second.
Okay. Moved and seconded that we approve the consent calendar as amended. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
And Mr. Patterson?
Yes. And now we move on to presentations. We're having our presentations this morning rather than this afternoon. I'll entertain a motion on the presentation calendar.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Moved and seconded that we approve the presentation calendar.
Life while serving in the armed forces. And whereas during Thank a Veteran Month, all levels of government and private citizens come together to honor and recognize our veterans for the great sacrifice they have made defending freedom and pay deep respect for those who have made the ultimate sacrifice. Therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim November 2012 as Thank a Veteran Month in San Luis Obispo County, urging all citizens and government leaders to honor the sacrifices made by our veterans and their families and pay homage to the men and women who have given their lives defending freedom and preserving our way of life.
Thank you, Supervisor Meacham, Chairman Patterson, board members, and county staff. As we gather here this morning, there are brave men and women around the world that make this possible. The bravest, 68,000 of those, woke up this morning serving in Afghanistan on the front line, keeping terrorism at bay. We're here to thank our veterans. It is the veteran, brave men and women who have worn a uniform for 236 years, who have kept our lands free from tyranny, secured our borders, and made it possible for our children to grow and become the innovators of tomorrow. Today is Election Day, and I encourage everyone in this room to reflect and remember who has made it possible for us to have the right to vote. Remember when you go inside the election booth and gather your thoughts that it is the veteran who has bled on the battlefield who gives us this right. It is the 1% of our population who serve around the world today that give us that right. And it is the mothers, the fathers, the husbands, the wives, and the children of those who serve that give us that right. Regardless of your inclination, all of us should exercise our right to vote, which has been bestowed upon us by the sacrifices of veterans who serve. As you go about your day, please take the time, and as you go this next month, please take the time and seek out veterans and thank them here in our county for what they have done and the things that they have bestowed upon us. Our county is a wonderful county that honors our veterans in many different ways. We have appreciation events yearly. We have the VA clinic. We have the new Vet Center. We have the different outreach programs, the Vet Express, the DAV van shuttle bus program, the Welcome Home Troops program, and programs like AmpServe. All these programs serve to better the lives of our veterans who have given so much for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Timmons. Dana? A question, I believe, or comment, Mr. Hill.
Dana, since I had the pleasure of joining you and others at the opening of the new Vet Center, I wonder if you could give that a quick plug.
Yes, definitely. We have a wonderful new facility here in San Luis Obispo. It's over on Southwood by the Y. It's the VA's Vet Center. It's a counseling service for combat veterans, and it's for veterans all the way back from World War II all the way to the conflicts today in Iraq and Afghanistan. And it's to help these veterans as they come home. They're dealing with issues that, you know, the average person that's walking down the street would never have to deal with. And so to help them be able to reacclimatize to being back in our civilian world, this Vet Center offers them the counseling and services they need to better do that. And it's just a wonderful program. The VA has 300 of those around the country. And we're very, very fortunate to have such a wonderful center here in our county.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Cummings. We do have a few members in the audience who would like to speak this morning on this issue. Mark Schaefer, followed by Catherine Rote.
Good morning. I'm Mark Schaefer. I'm the Executive Director of Ride On Transportation. We have the honor of, we're in our fifth year of providing the Veterans Express service, which picks up veterans anywhere in San Luis Obispo County, takes them to the VA clinic here, or all the way down to Santa Maria, where they can hook up with the VA bus and go down to Santa Barbara, Ventura in LA for treatment. and then they come back in the evening at 7:30, and we're there to pick them up and take them home door to door. The service continues to grow. It's 100% funded by donations and fundraising events, and you'll hear about a couple of those events coming up in the near future. Again, if you want to help out veterans, this program has grown to be a $60,000 a year program. So we're always struggling to find individuals in the community that will make donations to support it. You can go to ride-on.org and make a donation there, or call Ride On. You can just Google Ride On and find us. But we also have a plan that's called Thank a Vet. And for a $5 donation, you get a wristband that you put on that says Thank a Vet. And then for veterans, call Ride On and we'll get to you. This is a red, white, and blue band that you put on your wrist, so we know who you are and can thank you for your service and appreciation. And so I'd like to give each of you one, and for Frank, you get the red, white, and blue one. And thank you so much, and thank you so much for the community for supporting this. Ride On could not do this without the tremendous support from the community to continue this service. Thank you.
Anybody need five? Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I don't bring my
captive audience.
How did
here.
You know?
Mark, thank you. We were here when that program kicked off, and as you say, it has grown, and we're appreciative of Ride On's efforts to make it happen. Catherine Roach, are you out there somewhere? Okay, and she'll be followed by Greg Shear.
I was active duty Navy from 1992 to 1998 and an active reservist from 98 to 2000. Mind over matter is something I've wanted to do since my little brother David, an Army veteran, came home from the recent war in Iraq with severe post-traumatic stress and a heroin addiction. We struggled as a family to get David the help he needed, and he eventually got clean for a period of 6 months, but unfortunately he relapsed, used heroin one more time, and died of an overdose 2 years ago at Christmas. I'm sorry. He was 28 years old. I didn't think I would get upset. I've been working to create Mind Over Matter with an amazing group of individuals, two of whom are Marine veterans, Matt Reed and Daniel Patuco. Matt and Daniel both served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and both of them are struggling with post-traumatic stress. Unfortunately, they couldn't be here with me this morning. Darn it, because Matt's way better at public speaking than I am. but I wanted to mention them here as their bravery extends beyond the call of duty. Not only did Matt and Daniel fight for our country overseas under often brutal circumstances, but they're fighting on the front lines at home now as veterans, sharing their most personal and painful life experiences in order to save lives. I know that if my brother had had men like Matt and Daniel to relate to, it could have made a difference for him. This year's inaugural Mind Over Matter event is taking place this coming Sunday, November 11th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Fitness Works of Morro Bay. Fitness Works is generously hosting an open house that day, so you don't have to be a gym member to take part. There are several ways to participate, and I have flyers here if you'd like more information. There's a link to our Facebook page at the bottom of the flyer. Between the hours of 10 and 6, we will have an opening ceremony, a silent auction, 50-50 raffles, and a spin-a-thon. I'm a spin instructor. Spin is an indoor cycling class which is taught by certified instructors in 30 to 60-minute increments. Beginners are encouraged to give it a try. Simply pick up your pledge packet at Fitness Works of Morro Bay, pay $10 to hold your bike for your chosen time slot, and then get friends and family to sponsor you by the mile. For example, a dollar a mile would equal $10 for a 10-mile ride. If you're not interested in taking a cycling class, you can still pick up a pledge packet, gather pledges, come into Fitness Works, and use any of their equipment that day, treadmills, ellipticals, track your mileage, and collect your pledges. Other ways to participate are via flat tax-deductible donations or through donating items to be auctioned off during our silent auction. So spread the word and come this Sunday. Thank you for your time.
Catherine, thank you. And do you want to give the time and location again? And you can leave flyers. There's a table right outside the door if you'd like
Excellent.
To leave flyers. yeah. or anyone here can pick those up.
Thank you. That's Fitness Works of Morro Bay, and that's on Quintana Road. And it's an open house all day long, so you can go and use the gym all day if you'd like.
And that's this Sunday?
This coming Sunday, the 11th, correct, from 10 to 6.
Very good. Thank you. And our final request to speak on this item is Greg Shear.
Good morning. My name is Greg Shear, and I am here to talk about a fundraising event that I'm holding on November 17th, and the proceeds will go to our Veterans Express. And I'm holding a Texas Hold'em poker tournament at Mr. Rick's, and I don't know if any of you guys play poker.
Not well, but that's maybe
isn't
it? Perfect.
Every Tuesday.
Every Tuesday.
Every Tuesday, was that it? Anyway, we're having our fifth annual Texas Hold'em tournament, and all the proceeds go to the Veterans Express. And the history of the Veterans Express is one day I went into our VA clinic and talked to my provider, and she indicated to me how many of her patients can't make their appointments because they have no way of getting there. And we started the service in 2007 with 10 to 12 veterans a month, and I think right now, Mark, we're probably close to 170 a month. So it's grown and grown and grown, and it's going to continue to grow. So we got to work our butt off and raise a lot of money. So poker's fun. It's a fun event. We're going to have great prizes. It's a great time, and I encourage anybody, even Dana, to show up. Thank you.
And again, the information on
the information,
time location.
The poker. I'm sorry. The poker tournament is on November 17th, and it's going to be at 1 o'clock at Mr. Rick's in Avila Beach downstairs. And they wonderfully donated their facilities to us, and we hope to have a fun day, and I hope to see Supervisor Gibson.
Incompetent poker players
with a lot of cash.
Thank you so much for everything.
As I know, the veterans of the World War II generation are now dwindling in number, and in listening to their stories, their perspectives on service and on country and on the experiences they had in some of the worst situations a human could ever imagine themselves in, there's something to be learned here. So I would urge everyone to make it a two-way street, two-way communication with our veterans. Get to know one, get to know many, and understand what they have been through and how they view the world because of it.
Thank you, Supervisor Gibson, and our resident veteran on the board, Supervisor Meacham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Supervisor Gibson, for reminding folks that Sunday is Veterans Day, not just a day to just have a barbecue and have a great time, but go to one of these ceremonies. I guarantee you will walk away from that ceremony with a stronger appreciation for those that have served, and those, not just those that have served, but the families of those that have served as well, and they're extraordinarily important. And speaking of hearing from and the most incredible stories that you'll ever hear are from veterans. I had the opportunity to hear an amazing story from Supervisor Gibson's father, an incredible World War II veteran. So, once again, Sunday, I would encourage you. There's a number of them that hold the veteran ceremonies. Please attend. Take the kids. They'll appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Supervisor Meacham. With that, we'll move on to our next presentation, and I have the pleasure of reading that, and this is a resolution recognizing or actually awarding the Isabel P. Ruiz Humanitarian Award for 2012, and I'll ask Ms. Jeanette Duncan to come forward. Whereas the Isabel P. Ruiz Humanitarian Award annually recognizes and rewards a local individual for outstanding efforts in advocacy and caring for local people in San Luis Obispo County, And whereas the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation has selected Jeanette Duncan to receive the 2012 Isabel P. Ruiz Humanitarian Award for more than 40 years of service to the underprivileged in San Luis Obispo County with the goal of helping families succeed. And whereas, as Executive Director of People Self-Help Housing, Jeanette has been the guiding force in developing 627 units of affordable housing throughout the county, which have benefited approximately 2,000 adults and children. And whereas Jeanette has inspired many with her years of personal connection and compassionate advocacy on behalf of the underprivileged, especially in regards to affordable housing locally and nationally, now therefore be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby recognize Jeanette Duncan for being selected by the San Luis Obispo County Community Foundation to receive the Isabel P. Ruiz Humanitarian Award for 2012. Jeanette?
There you are. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, very good, too. Do you want to share some other hands here?
You want to get a picture real? I see Cheryl has a camera, so why don't we get it?
So we'll try to make, we'll try to make ourselves presentable.
And Barry Vanderkellen is here also from the San Luis Obispo County Community Foundation, and I don't know in which order you want to go, but we certainly want to give Jeanette an opportunity to speak, but I think we'll...
We'd like to load some more accolades on top of her, so we'll let her collect her thoughts.
Okay, Barry, why don't you proceed then?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, thank you for allocating this time this morning. My name is Barry Vanderkellen, and I have the privilege of serving as the Executive Director of the San Luis Obispo County Community Foundation, and we work to improve the quality of life of all residents of San Luis Obispo County by supporting nonprofits, helping people create and implement their philanthropic plans, and build endowments that invest in current and future generations. The Isabel P. Ruiz Humanitarian Award fits very comfortably within our mission and focus. Isabel was selfless in her determination to build bridges and provide create access for people who otherwise wouldn't have access to the care and the services that they needed. She was a model for all people in the county, especially in the Latino community and for women, all more important while we're honoring Jeanette. This award was created by a dear friend of Isabel's, Bill Broadbent, who admired for many years her selflessness and her commitment to her community. So he created this award in her
taking time from her family, from her private life, to help other individuals, such as Jeanette has done. And to correct the supervisor, I just found out 5,000 people is who she's helped now. That's 5,000 families that will continue to go on with the selfless acts that she's presented to them, that they will take those, embody them, and continue to help individuals to better themselves and better their lives. Jeanette, thank you so much for being part of this community and allowing us to share.
You're welcome, David.
Are there others with you here today as well?
My father, Napoleon Ruiz.
Very good. Thank you for sharing those words with us. Jeanette?
Well, first of all, I thank the foundation, but I have to thank my family because they've had to put up with me all these years. Because one of the things that happens when you are committed to helping others is you often give up your own time with your family and friends. But I do want to give a little vignette as to how I got involved in all of this. I came to California in 1967. I lived in Supervisor Gibson's district. At that time, we had no regional bus transportation. We had no ride-ons. And I was doing volunteer work with some churches there and asked to do home visits by ministers who had parishioners or members of their congregation in really dire straits. I met a woman. She was a widow with five children. She lived in Cayucas. She was getting a small Social Security check, very small, because she had the five children. Her husband had died, and it was at that time before SSI, or Supplemental Security Income. And
I noted that at the beginning of the month, she had a car. She would go to the store, and she would buy like 100 pounds of potatoes and 50 pounds of rice and beans, and she would put them in her car trunk, but she didn't take them out when she got home. And I was trying to figure out why was she doing this. I found out that she had to dole it out, because if she opened up the trunk, the children would just attack the food and eat it all, and there would be nothing by mid-month. And this disturbed me greatly, and so I started doing some research. And there was this program that the federal government was talking about, and it was food stamps. So I came to the Board of Supervisors, and I spoke, and I said, there's this program called food stamps from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Could this county participate? Everybody looked at me, and they said, well, we don't know. We don't know. So I came back the following Board of Supervisors meeting, and I said, have you done anything about food stamps? Well, we're having problems determining, we don't have a safe. I remember this was a big issue in 1968. They didn't have a safe here, and food stamps were considered like money. So it took us, I think, about a year. I think Supervisor Mankins at that time said, well, we've got to get a safe. We've got to figure out. So my point being that a little tiny rock you throw in a pond has all these ripples. And, of course, now the food stamp program is nationwide and countywide. Also, we got a bus system going in Morro Bay with volunteers. The city of Morro Bay bought a van, and volunteers would drive people to the hospital because we didn't have regional transportation. And after that, then there was a movement to start a health clinic. And that's when I met Isabel. We first started a volunteer health clinic at Veterans Buildings, where some retired nurses would come and check blood pressure and talk to people. And after that, Isabel wanted to start down in Napomo. So I said, you know, this is the rock you throw in the pond and the ripples go out. So my encouragement is that you should never give up. You should always look for solutions. And I couldn't be where I am today without the staff. I have a lot of staff here and my board. And my board's all volunteers. And my staff, although they get paid, volunteer a lot of extra time. So it's just a word of encouragement to all of you.
Jeanette, thank you. And while you're there, one of the things our resolution didn't mention is people's self-help housing. We spoke to your efforts here in San Luis Obispo, but this office also serves Santa Barbara and Ventura counties as well. And do you, off the top of your head, have the numbers of the programs in the three counties in the tri-county area that this office serves?
Well, I think we have over 5,000 people every night that sleep in an affordable home that we've provided, either one they built themselves or one that we own and manage and rent.
Yes,
that's
and you
pretty phenomenal, 5,000 people every night have a safe home. Additionally, we do foreclosure mitigation, trying to help people keep homes that they own, and then do homeownership counseling for others. So we're serving annually many thousand people, besides those that sleep every night at a warm, affordable home.
Mm-hmm. And you not only have ownership housing, but you now also manage it. Supervisor Hill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'm happy that we get to share in honoring Jeanette for all the great work she's done. And People Self-Help Housing has really provided a critical component in our community that I don't know otherwise would be here. What little affordable housing, it's an enduring issue in our community, as we know, and certainly even in the state of California. And without organizations like People Self-Help Housing, so many of our friends, our families, our neighbors would be without good housing. And that's the other thing I want to stress, too, is the people's self-help projects are such high-quality projects. I mean, they really are. I mean, I remember touring one in my district and here in Slo City with you, and that had opened not long ago, and was just so impressed with just, you know, really how nicely done they are. They really are such an important part of our community. So thank you so much, Jeanette.
You're welcome.
Supervisor Meacham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first of all, I'd like to thank the Ruiz family. Thank you and your mom in particular for all that she did. Known Jeanette for quite some time as a recovering mayor of Paso Robles.
And
planning commissioner. Had the opportunity to work with her. But in addition to that, I was an electrical contractor that wired the building that they put down here in San Luis Obispo. Didn't know
really what they were at that point in time, and then I found out. And I believe that every elected official in San Luis County, now and in the past, and probably in the future, as well as state of California, put Jeanette together with people self-help. They know them, and they if they don't, they'll get to know them, and you do a great job. I'm wondering where that young, good-looking husband of yours is.
He's moving slow.
Okay.
Jeanette, thank you for your years of service and providing affordable housing for residents of San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and Ventura counties. You have a great staff, and they're very engaged in other efforts, Workforce Housing Coalition to as one, and they're committed to the work that they do, and I think it's a reflection on you and to the Ruiz family. Isabel, I believe, for years worked for Community Action Partnership, she was an incredible motivating force for the families that she served, but also the people that worked with her. And to the San Luis Obispo County Community Foundation, we're grateful that this award's been created, and we can be reminded every year of the service that people give to the underserved in San Luis Obispo. So thank you.
And I do want to say we have to thank you all and your employees and even former employees. Dana Lilly's here. He came to work for us right out of Cal Poly. And then Paul Crawford hired him here, and he's here now. Dana, there you are. So all of you, both your elected officials and employees, have been very good to us. And I know Isabel will be happy since we worked together so many years.
Okay. And we do have one request to speak also, Mr. Lilly, Dana Lilly of our planning department. Dana?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dana Lilly with your planning staff. Since Jeanette let the cat out of the bag that I did work for her, fresh out of grad school at Cal Poly, nervous as heck, couldn't stand up in front of a group of people and speak without shaking in my boots. I would say that that's another function that nonprofit corporations perform, and Peoples has done it here, is to train people who end up working for government. So I think I did a better job because I worked for Jeanette for 3 years, from 82 to 85, than had I come here directly. The other thing I wanted to say is, of those 5,000 people who have safe and affordable housing, I would say it's safe to say that some number of thousands of those in our county are stable employees for local businesses and local governments and would not be as stable were it not for People's Self-Help Housing Corporation. So thank you, Jeanette.
Thank you, Dana.
Thanks for helping us get us safe, too.
Yes. thank you all for being here this morning to recognize the accomplishments of the veterans and also People's Self-Help Housing. We'll move along now to general public comment for items that are not on today's agenda. We'll wait a few moments for the chambers to clear. Ms. Roderwald, you're first up, as usual, with good news, I hope.
Thank you. Good news is it's finally Election Day. We've all been looking forward to this day, not only here, but certainly nationwide. So polls have been open for almost 3 hours now. We understand that business has been very brisk. We had lines waiting for polls opening. We hope that everybody will be sporting the I voted sticker that I see all of you have. I appreciate that. I caught Supervisor Meacham voting this morning, but I have to admit that I dropped my ballot off this morning, too. So some of us do wait till the last minute. That's okay as long as everybody gets out and votes. I also want to just let you know we started a new program this year for our military and overseas voters that allows them to print off a ballot that we either email to them or they can access through a special system, and then they fax the ballot back to us because it's so hard to get ballots to our military voters who are serving in particularly in combat areas overseas. Our fax machine has been busy from 6 o'clock this morning, it probably is spitting out probably about 10 ballots an hour that we're going to be able to count. We'll have to duplicate those ballots, but these military and overseas voters are able to cast their ballots in this way, and it's so encouraging to see the great turnout. We have about 800 voters that we've issued ballots to, and as of this morning, we probably had over 500 of their ballots back, so we're hoping that we can get a lot more of those turned into us. So, again, I thank you, and keep us in your good thoughts. Thank
you. Ms. Rodewald, can people who have a vote-by-mail ballot, you mentioned they can take them to any of the clerk's offices,
right,
but can they also take them to other polling places?
Absolutely. Any polling place in our county or in the county in which it was issued. So if you have a Santa Barbara County ballot, it needs to get back to Santa Barbara. Okay. But San Luis Obispo can be any polling location in our county.
Very good. Thank you. And I was in Atascadero at 6:45 this morning to vote, and people were lined up.
Yep, that's what I understand. Yeah. Yeah, our poll workers hopefully were ready and able to serve everybody first thing.
Very good. Thank you very much. Frank, did you...
Yes, I did see Julie this morning. She mentioned that I was waiting the last minute, but actually I was priming myself because I have to vote all day.
Just getting a little bit extra experience in first thing. Thank you.
That's why he's sporting so many I voted stickers. Huh?
Yeah.
I want to know the aliases here. Eric Greeney, followed by Mark Buckman.
Good morning. I am Eric Greening. I also have this fashion accessory sticker, and of course, I would encourage everyone out there to get one. Election Day, we call it the last minute, but it has historically been when people voted. And sometimes it takes that long to read the ballot pamphlet. I know 31 took me several days to get through. I won't tell you how I voted because we're within 100 feet of a place where people are voting. But anyway, doing the homework is a critical part of voting. And so I would encourage everyone to do the homework and to vote. This is our collective country that all of us have a stake in, and this is the most dramatic way we show the stake and show the direction we want it to move forward. I'd also like to thank you for your vote yesterday relative to sending a letter to the Coastal Commission on the seismic imaging. It's not exactly the letter I would want to send. Yours is sort of no until such and such, such and such, such and such. And I'm not sure that any of those such and such will address the real issues that go with the no. But in any event, the issue will be heard at the Coastal Commission next week, Wednesday, sometime during the day, morning or afternoon. I'm not sure just when, and it'll be in Santa Monica. Their own staff report is recommending denial based on the inconsistency of this project with Coastal Act Sections 30230 and 30231. They leave a sort of an out in the staff recommendation that if the same kind of pre-screening of alternatives is done that has not been done, it could become subject to the coastal dependent industrial override policy in 30262. I think the screen is going to have to look more like a wall because I don't think there are the holes will actually let something like this become consistent with 30230 and 30231 unless it doesn't kill sea creatures. And of course, we know that the coastal dependent use that is at stake here is itself killing sea creatures every day. With
the San Luis Coastal School Board. I'm also a member of the Regional Occupation Program Board. So I want to talk to you with both those hats on. There was going to be a room full of teachers here, except they're in the classroom, and they're working with this state's future and working with our students.
So for all those teachers that can't be here, I want to talk to you about potholes. I want to talk to you about police. I want to talk to you about firefighters, senior care, child care, and I want to talk to you about schools. I'm here about stop signs, and I'm here about sewers, and I'm here about schools. Everything that I've just mentioned takes tax dollars, and they're all starting to be affected by tax dollars. The schools alone in the last 5 years have lost $24 billion to tax cuts. So it makes me very glad when I pick up the newspaper, and I read papers from all over the county, and I pick up newspapers, and there's letters to the editor about, God, there's potholes everywhere. We need to fix the potholes. And it makes me glad because now everyone's being affected by the tax cuts that have happened. The budget cuts that have happened in the state of California. So when you drive through a pothole, I want you to remember that what we've done is we've turned our public schools into potholes. And whether you have children in school, or whether you have grandkids in school, or whether you don't have children in school, and whether you don't have grandkids in school, the budget cuts are affecting you now. I have to tell you, my 1989 Volvo, I think sometimes it's not going to climb out of some of the potholes that we have right now, and it's rattling a whole lot more. I really like everybody to just listen carefully to this one little statistic. There have been no new textbooks in the San Luis Coastal School District since 2005. No new textbooks since 2005, because one of the first things that school districts were allowed to cut were textbooks. And so in order to save programs and teachers, we didn't buy new textbooks. And I believe that's true across this entire county. We know that if we don't fix potholes, then the roads start to crumble, and it costs much more to fix them because the road's gone. And the same is true with public education. If we don't start educating our children, we're going to have to be fixing them their entire lives. I want to put on my other hat. I want to put on my hat as the Regional Occupation Program Board Member. And I want to talk to you about jobs.
Okay, you're out of time.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, then I'll just end this with everybody needs to vote for Prop 30 because we need the money. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Buckman. Tom Dawson, followed by Richard Margetson. Please come forward so you're ready to speak after the preceding speaker concludes. Mr. Dawson.
Tom Dawson, science teacher. What do ag cluster and steelhead salmon plan have to do with Agenda 21 in this county? It's easy to overlook local government since people are saturated with too much information in the internet age. Compounding this is the fact that Agenda 21 is a dull topic. It becomes understandable how it has been able to fly under the radar since 1992. Slowly working its way into our cities and counties. Agenda 21, which reportedly means an agenda for the 21st century, is a United Nations program launched in 1992 for the vague purposes of achieving sustainable development. Congress never approved Agenda 21. 178 world leaders agreed to it in 1992 at the Rio Summit. Since then, the UN has mostly bypassed national governments using Agenda 21's National Council of Local Environmental Initiatives, called ICLEI, to make agreements directly with local governments. ICLEI's U.S. presence has grown to include agreements with over 600 cities, towns, and counties here in the U.S., which are now copying the land use plans prescribed in Agenda 21. Agenda 21 ostensibly seeks to promote sustainability, the latest revisionist word for environmentalism. Since Americans have learned too many negative things about environmentalism, sustainability is an amorphous concept that can be interpreted to an extreme degree that would regulate and restrict many parts of our lives. Agenda 21 promotes European socialist goals that will erode our freedoms and liberties. Agenda 21 goes well beyond environmentalism. Other broad goals include reducing private property ownership, eliminating single-family homes, private car ownership.
Conservation implementation plan for Los Osos. Last week I came back and had comments on it. I didn't have enough time to finish those comments, so I'm going to today. Mr. Gibson, at that meeting, went after our the vice president of our local CSD board, Leonard Moutart, and questioned whether or not he understood the conditions of the CDP with respect to the $5 million and the 50 gallons per capita requirement for the wastewater project. Mr. Gibson insinuated that Mr. Moutart didn't have a clue and that the comments from the CSD board that were submitted to the county had already been addressed and we didn't have to worry about it. I'm going to read right from the condition. The condition is not 50 gallons per capita. The condition is the water conservation, condition 5B, the water conservation program required by the county project, which limits indoor water use to no more than 50 gallons per day per person on average. To no more than 50. Not to get down to 50. Mr. Gibson has this problem about this nexus of spending the $5 million on water conservation in Los Osos that once we hit the 50, the project may not have a nexus for funding. The conditions also state, Mr. Gibson and Mr. Waddell that day stated that the county has to set aside up to $5 million for this program. Condition doesn't say that. Condition says the county shall set aside $5 million, not up to $5 million for water conservation. What was really interesting, gentlemen, is 2 days after that meeting at Mr. Gibson's office hours, and I'm sure he didn't relay any of this to you before the hearing that Tuesday, he stated that he plans at some point down the road when we reach that 50, which will easily happen with the toilet retrofit part of the program, and that number can be proven, to go back to the Coastal Commission and ask them to curtail the program so we don't have to spend the $5 million, so we can't get that number to below 50, as far below 50 as possible, to help save the basin, because he doesn't see a nexus. The nexus is in the condition. That's what Mr. Moutart was talking about. That's the concern of the CSD. And if the condition had, and that plan had been reviewed at a public meeting in Los Osos, those issues could have been addressed. And next time it'd be nice if all of you read the plan before it came before you and had comment on it.
Thank you, Mr. Margetson. Dr. C. Height, followed by Mike Brown. Dr. Height?
Dr. C. Height, Los Osos. I want to see testimony to the Coastal Commission that represents the will of the people.
Very much objecting to electing a commissioner who has already demonstrated the intention to limit public speech on issues. That is my major concern, not his position on Los Osos Sewer, pro or con, but the intention. And we have a public record of this, of repeatedly trying to limit public speech on issues to a coastal community.
Represent.
One of the things that this board really wanted was to see independent peer review, and PG&E was good enough to see and contact me some months ago about the value of having the county have its own representative at the table to review and analyze and report on behalf of the citizens of the county the seismic studies that are being undertaken by right now around Diablo Canyon Power Plant.
Represent.
And there's a single phone number for all the disabled in the county to call for evacuation. I imagine that might even be scared kids at home who have the PG&E calendar that came in the mail that shows us that we have one single phone number to call. And we know we have a fault. So knowing we have a fault, hopefully the county representative that selected has an open mind and will consider representing all of the public, and that means the stay-at-home mothers, the children, the seniors, the disabled, everyone that's relying on a single phone number because we know we have a fault. Thank you. Represent.
You know, to clarify to the public why this is, I think, a very significant thing that we're doing is that this will allow us to have a seismologist, an expert, to contract with an expert, to choose the expert that, you know, I will work with Supervisor Gibson, Mr. Alsop, and Mr. Grant, and others, to choose a seismologist to represent the citizens of San Luis Obispo and to be part of the peer review of all of the studies to provide us with an analysis. And I think we will also ask that individual to come to report to the board.
Property owners that will be affected by this ordinance if you change it. We put in the record last week some of the problems. To continue with that, the new ordinance perpetuates the existing part of the ordinance, which in effect expropriates 95% of the land in a parcel where you actually allow it, debarring people from ever using it for anything except agriculture. I think that's a problem as you go forward with future generations. It's a very oppressive regulation and should be changed. The EIR states that the revised ordinance will ultimately result in the protection of 125,000 acres of land. So is that protection from whom? The owners, the farmers, whoever. The new ordinance eliminates the density bonus that's in the old ordinance, which actually could allow a few more homes in exchange for clustering. The current ordinance allows parcels as small as 10,000 square feet to be created, and this seems to make sense for an ag cluster because it minimizes the land being used. It also might, in some cases, provide for some affordable housing. The new ordinance sets a minimum lot size of 2.5 acres and then caps the maximum lot size at 5 acres, which just seems to be a conflict with the whole clustering concept. The new ordinance would forbid a cluster subdivision from having a community water system. And as you know, when you were considering the Paso Water Basin, some of your staff brought up the voluntary associations and districts in the Central Valley, which actually set up a way for larger agricultural operation with deeper wells to maybe help some of their neighbors. So I think you ought to think about this in that context. Again, we'd hope you'd stop and notify everybody if you're going to bring this back.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Ben DeFada, followed by Lindy O.
Good morning, Chairman Patterson, board, staff, sheriff, and public. I am Ben DeFada from the poor community of Los Osos, where thousands of people will have to move out of this little town because you decided to build a gravity plant that costs twice as much as an up-to-date alternative plant. Every once in a while, a disaster of great proportions occurs, like what we have seen a week ago on the East Coast. While they have storms and hurricanes, we on the Pacific Rim of this country's West Coast have our earthquakes, both as devastating and rebuilding the damage to that was done after World War II. Both are very difficult to rebuild, like living in the 21st century comfort and then to death and suffering. As we have seen in Japan 2 years ago, the undersea earthquake that turned into a nuclear power plant disaster, we still are seeing the outfall debris that is still floating across the Pacific onto our shores from Japan. We will never know how many lives and billions of dollars were lost because of this one seismic event. In reality, what can mere men do to stop a hurricane or a seismic event? In the case of Los Osos Sewer Project, now I hear there are 13 faults under or near the village of Los Osos, as well as under or near the Diablo nuclear power plant. A little bit unlucky, I think, with the number 13. As in the case of the Diablo nuclear power plant to begin with, it was a bad place to build a nuclear bomb electric power plant from the start and would be better off if it was closed. A disaster waiting to happen, for it's not known when a big seismic event will happen. I hear a lot of politics and also baiting with a lot of taxes to the county was at play and the plant got built. Where do you think PG&E gets the money to pay the taxes? Well, it gets it from the consumers. Here, right now, in Los Angeles, you had the opportunity to build the latest state-of-the-art collection and treatment plant at one half the cost. Instead, you opted for the most antiquated, unaffordable, overpriced, energy hog, stinking gravity collection system. In a severe seismic event, repairs would be faster and cheaper to rebuild. But no, you opted to install the gravity collection with its deep trenches and large pipes that would take a long time to fix and running on top of the huge expense to replace its deep broken pipes. We can't afford the $200 million project now, so how can we afford to repair it in case of a severe seismic event with this disaster
impact on us? The $200 million that is expected, that's probably lowballing it, continues to not go smoothly, continues to not have public outreach or information provided to the community as areas are shut off and streets are blocked. And it continues to bring up questions such as, why do we have a joke of a conservation plan? Paso Robles is doing a fabulous job. Why does a county incapable of doing a reasonable job at providing the conservation when we are losing day by day, we are losing our basin as they've stood by for 30 years and they continue to stand by? The only answer, I'll jump ahead, is Nacimiento is in the plan. 600 acre feet was planned out during the fine screening report that was done early on when the county first stole the sewer project away from us, thanks to Mr. Blakesley and his AB 2701 legislation. That plan seems to come back to question, why are we not putting the water back into the basin? We have no farmers to take the reuse. There is no reuse conservation plan. There's, you know, about a 20th of the water is really going to go someplace. Up on the Broderson disposal site, which is supposed to be an 8-acre disposal area, the county knows that it will fail. They know that the salt water has already moved underneath. Therefore, it is an obsolete plan. Yet they went ahead and they tore down 67 100-year-old eucalyptus trees, 6 100-year-old oaks in a beautiful walking area, which we are being deprived day by day by because we lose our trees constantly in Los Osos, at a cost of $1.6 million. But it was never questioned. It was never stopped. It's moved forward. The trees are gone. Now we'll spend the rest of the $1.6 million putting in an obsolete field that will eventually, in 5 years, prove that it didn't work. Tri-W, that's supposed to be a collection basin. They're out there regrading it now at our dollar because they didn't do it right in the first place. I doubt that it'll end up being a basin to begin with. I just want to say Los Osos is a big black and green bottomless hole. Black for the people of Los Osos and green for this county.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. Gwen Taylor, followed by Julie Tacker.
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor, and I am a resident of Los Osos in the Prohibition Zone. On October 17th, 2012, a notice of public hearing was sent out to some in the Prohibition Zone of Los Osos, property owners as well as renters. The Subdivision Review Board was to hear the application of the county to acquire a 24.5 acre of land by subdivision from John Giacomo Mazzi and Janet Klein, property needed for the Los Osos wastewater treatment plant. The Subdivision Review Board was to hear this agendized item yesterday, but it was pulled by Public Works at the time of the hearing. The property division into two separate properties, one for the plant, the other remaining, including a private residence, are in a floodplain, a wetlands area, with a sewer plant that is to have oxidation ditches. The vicinity map accompanied with the staff report yesterday did not show the locations of the residence associated well or any other well used for agriculture, grazing, or row crops. The approval of the subdivision could have set off an appeal to the Coastal Commission, as noted on the public notice. It appears that the action of the county under eminent domain has not cleared, and there is still a cloud over the process of acquisition, even though the coastal permit was issued with the Jacamozzi site as the location for the treatment plant. Since the Jacamozzi site was designated in the coastal permit, the public has encouraged Supervisor Gibson to address the acquisition of the property, but Supervisor Gibson rebutted the public at every opportunity when this subject was brought up. Unfortunately, Mr. Gibson has a tendency not to listen to the public, and what Mr. Markison said regarding the presentation at the offices, closed office, it's not recorded, is true. There were public members there that heard exactly what Mr. Markison reported and exactly what Mr. Gibson said. Sometimes things that should be made public are not things that you as a board should know. You do not know, and you trust one of your supervisors who...
The stamp is 45 cents, and I got three of them at my house. How many more went out for an item that then was to be pulled from the calendar? Mr. Dennis Law, one person who wrote a correspondence on this, actually got a telephone call, I believe from Public Works, letting him know that it would be off calendar. But there was no courtesy using Dig Los Osos, using the newspaper, to let the rest of the public know that there would be no hearing item yesterday. And so I think that's a failure on the Public Works Department and then whoever handles the legal public notices. When we get there, forming a public lot takes a public procedure, and it has to comply with the policies that the county, the planning policies that we have in place. And currently, what we saw yesterday in the staff report, it does not. So we will get there, I believe, and I'll attend at that time. Something else that's come up is the construction of the wastewater project, I guess, officially began on October 8th. There is road construction happening, dirt being moved, pipes being laid. A water conservation plan has been approved. My phone is ringing. People have questions. And somehow there's a disconnect. We hired HDR in December of 2011 for $7,637,000. $5,500,000 of that was to go toward resident project representative services. Gentlemen, there's no sign on the door, there's no telephone number, no postcard for the public to call, complain, ask questions, and be heard.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. Tom Murray, followed by David Baldwin. Mr. Murray.
Tom Murray from Rio Grande. At last, it is election day. I know a lot of other people have commented about that, and certainly I, for one, will be delighted not to have to watch some of the commercials we've been forced to watch over the last few months. But I do think it's important to talk about infrastructure and what Proposition 30 means for that. Because you folks here, I mean, you're hearing this now with the current speakers, and some of the key issues, some of the most important issues before you are issues of infrastructure. Well, I think there's more than one kind of infrastructure, and Proposition 30 addresses that. It's a cultural infrastructure of education. You know, in these commercials, we see they're all, I mean, not all, but almost every one of them says, well, you know, what are we doing? What are we leaving our children? What are we doing this for our children? What are we doing that for our children? But the reality is Proposition 30 is an actual opportunity to do something real. In terms of taking care of the education. And it's not just a matter of our children, it's a matter of us. It's a matter of us, those of us who are nearing retirement age. Because without that cultural infrastructure of a well-educated workforce, we're in terrible straits. And I will tell you, I've worked on a foundation that raises money to help innovative programs in the Lucy Marr School District. And I've gotten to know a lot of the teachers and administrators there. They're extremely capable. They are very good at what they do. They work very hard. But quite frankly, we're watching our educational infrastructure being dismantled. And that's from K through 12 and through the college. Colleges are becoming far less accessible. They're limiting their classes. They're making it harder and harder for students to graduate. It's getting to the point now, when I went to school, you could go to school, work, and pay for your education all at the same time. Well, that's not a possibility anymore. And that takes a lot of people off the table. And so I just want to say I think Proposition 30 is really critical to the future of this state. To take the short-term thing and say, well, you know, we're not going to vote for this. It's too much money. It's more taxes. It's whatever. These taxes are very carefully apportioned. They're spread out. It spreads the pain. They're fair. They're balanced. And what they stand to do is at least slow down, and I'm not going to go so far as to say halt the dismantling of our educational infrastructure, but they'll give us some breathing room, and we as a society dearly need that. So I guess all you guys have voted. That's my next job as soon as I'm done here, and hopefully we'll see Prop 30 pass. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Murray. David Baldwin.
Yeah, good morning. I'm David Baldwin from Los Osos. I'm glad to hear a couple other speakers also speak in support of Prop 30. That's what I was here for today, and I will try to tailor my comments to not repeat some of the information that was already given. But I felt it appropriate to be here today, given that this is Election Day. And, you know, without Prop 30, the schools and community have began to turn around. I know in the industry that I'm in construction, I can tell you there are certainly more guys working on our public works projects here locally and across the state at this time this year than there were last year. We are headed in the right direction. Still have a long ways to go, but we are headed in the right direction. Now, given the testimony that we had earlier this morning and the presentation with the veterans, I did want to, and given the fact also that Veterans Day is upon us now, and something that's near and dear to me. My father is a World War II veteran, 29 months in the jungles of the Philippines and New Guinea. My brother's a decorated Vietnam veteran, and my nephew, who was just killed in 2007 on his motorcycle in Atascadero, was a sergeant. But I want to say that, you know, these programs, especially the DSPS programs, you know, they serve a lot of veterans at Cuesta College. They're very important to getting our people back to work. These are the people that not only we owe these services to, but they deserve it, in my opinion, more than most others. And to see those programs, DSPS has been devastated already. To see them cut even more is just unspeakable, in my opinion. And I encourage everyone that hears this to, if you haven't voted already, we want to support Prop 30. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Baldwin. That concludes my request to speak on general public comment this morning. Supervisor Hill has a comment.
Yeah, if I could, Mr. Chair, I appreciate it. Before we do perhaps break, I wanted to perhaps have a moment of silence. We lost a very important member of our community this past week, Greg Hind, who many of you know was certainly a noted business person in our community, but even more importantly, a noted philanthropist, a conservationist of great generosity. Some of the most important projects in this community probably would not have been able to go forward were it not for Greg and his family's generosity, all the way up to the current one that we're working on with the Wild Cherry Canyon project, as many people are aware of. That's something that has become increasingly difficult. Greg was an important funder, as was a lot of other people, and then when the endowment was required for maintenance, Greg stepped up and wrote a very generous pledge for that as well. This community is a much better place because we had Greg Hind in it, and we will be less for his loss. So perhaps we could have a moment of silence before we go to.
Yes, thank you, and we will do that. Please join us in a moment of silence recognizing the loss of Greg Hind. Thank you. There isn't an area of the county that was not touched by Mr. Hines' generosity. He will be truly missed. Supervisor Gibson, did you?
I was only going to add, Mr. Chairman, that he did participate in so many worthwhile and exceptional projects all over the county, as you said. But what struck me about him is he did it with such joy, to see his face light up when he knew he was getting engaged in a project that was going to do something to strengthen community was really a treasure. And as both of you said, he will be very, very deeply missed.
Yes. Thank you. With that, we're going to take a short break and reconvene at 10:45. Please take your seats and we'll resume our meeting.
He will bring a tremendous dynamism to representing the interests of counties before the state. So we'll look forward to that. We'll have more to talk about regarding CSAC in the coming weeks and months.
Thank you. Supervisor Hill, any?
Yeah, I'll just point out real quickly that I was pleased to see, and I know that Jason Giffen, our planning director, has seen this, and probably Mr. Buckshy too, in the Pacific Coast Business Times, which is a business newspaper that covers this county, Santa Barbara County, and Ventura, did a very very positive editorial on our economic element that we adopted, and also on the, you know, the obviously the economic development strategy that we've been involved with the EDC. So I'll have copies made for my colleagues and such if you don't subscribe. But it was good to see that in a business paper that covers three different counties, we continue to get very good coverage for the things that we're doing here.
Very good. Thank you, Supervisor Hill. Supervisor Meacham?
Yes, just quickly, this last week I spent 2 days in Sacramento to attend the realignment conference. That there were 650 sheriffs, other law enforcement agencies, district attorneys, a few county supervisors to hear some of the strategies, if you will, relative to realignment. They were basically all asking the same question that we had asked at our last meeting in regard to data, and pretty much reiterated the fact that it's relatively so new that the data is not there. There was a lot of interesting concepts that have been presented by other counties of what they're doing regarding the realignment, the split sentencing, things like that. There's a lot of issues, and I went up with the sheriff, so he is he's very engaged in this, and I had an opportunity to meet our new CSAC director and chat with him quite a bit up there. So,
very good. Thank you. We'll see how that progresses as we continue to experience the impacts of implementation of AB 109. Supervisor Teixeira.
Nothing this month, Chairman Patterson. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And I just want to quickly state that last week we held a forum in Atascadero, a panel of formerly homeless and currently homeless individuals shared their experiences with a wide cross-section of the community. We did the same thing last night at the Mission here in San Luis Obispo. Both events were very well attended, and it's an effort to really educate the broader community about homelessness in San Luis Obispo County, the various services and programs that are available, and the efforts that we're making to address the homeless issue. On December 12th, the Homeless Services Oversight Council, which is an advisory body to this board, will meet from 1 to 3 p.m. at the Veterans Memorial Building, and the public is invited. We are, again, doing a comprehensive assessment of programs that are available for homelessness homeless individuals in the county. I'll conclude that item and ask our clerk to introduce the next item, please.
Item number 15, review of the fiscal year 2013-14 budget goals and policies, budget balancing strategies and approaches, and board priorities.
Ms. Jackson, you'll be presenting that for staff, or Mr. Buckshy?
Yeah, actually, I'll just make a few comments and then hand it over to Emily from there. Just wanted to note that the policy strategies and priorities related to the upcoming year budget 13-14 are the second step in the budget process. Back on October 9th, a few weeks back, about a month now, I guess, we did the forecast for the upcoming year, and this what we have before us today is the second step in the process. And really what we're doing today is reviewing the goals and policies and strategies, which really serve as the foundation for moving forward in more detail with the budget process. Staff uses this information, the policies and priorities, to then build the proposed budget, which we will ultimately bring to your board in mid-June. So this really does set things in motion and more or less puts the upcoming budget year, gets the upcoming budget year underway. And with that, I will hand it over to Emily Jackson.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Buckshot.
Thank you. I am Emily Jackson from the Administrative Office, here today to provide the annual review of the county's budget goals and policies and budget balancing strategies and approaches. And once I'm done, we'll move forward, and Mr. Buckshy will lead your board in a discussion about the priorities for the upcoming year. So as you may remember, Officers Association, or GFOA, which has established many best practices related to governmental budgeting and provides really a good foundation for our existing policies. Just to touch on a few, our policies have really provided a sound framework for the strategic and long-term approach that we've taken to shrinking the gap over the recent years. Likewise, they're also designed to promote a balanced approach and to define boundaries in times when we see growth or when we see a need for reductions. Ultimately, our policies seek to maintain the county's financial position, supporting good bond ratings that we've been able to maintain in recent years, and also enabling us to manage any potential risks to our financial condition. We measure the usefulness of our budget goals and policies in many ways, but in one way is through our performance measures. The Administrative Office currently and for the past several years has had two different performance measures that relate to our budget goals and policies. And this first one is that we track the ratio of our general fund backed debt to the annual general fund budget. A ratio under 5% is considered favorable by most bond rating agencies, and so that's our target. And as you will note, at the end of fiscal year 11-12, we were well within those that target. I will note here, just because we've still got the history, that the jump that we saw in 08-09 to 09-10 was due really to two things, the first of which was a shrinking general fund, and also the fact that we refinanced some pension obligation bonds. The next performance measure tracks the ratio of our total contingencies and reserves to the county's general fund operating budget. This measure relates to budget goal and policy number 25, which speaks to and lays out requirements for the funding of our contingencies and reserves. And just as on the previous slide, it's important to note that we have maintained, we are within our targets over the last several years, and that's certainly something we expect to do here moving forward. And moving on to our budget balancing strategies and approaches, as you're all aware, fiscal year 13-14 will be year 6 of the 7-year pain plan. This graphic is probably pretty familiar to everyone at this point. It provides a good representation of the basis of the plan and the basis of our budget balancing strategies and approaches, which are based on taking a multi-year approach to shrinking the gap and carefully using short-term options in our attempts to close our gap. Per the pain plan, in fiscal year 2013-14, we'll be looking to close the remaining gap using 10% of the remaining gap is planned to be closed with short-term options. And I want to note that that's down significantly from 50% back in fiscal year 08-09. So as evidenced by the ever-shrinking gap, the budget balancing strategies and approaches are clearly working. And as such, similar to the budget goals and policies, at this time we're not recommending any changes moving into budget preparation for fiscal year 13-14. However, just to touch on the approaches, because I think it's important to familiarize and remind ourselves of what those are each year, I'll go through a couple of those really quickly here. First, I'll touch on the approaches to addressing the budget gap in the long term, and those include a preparation of a budget that's in line with your board's priorities, and again, that's something that we're going to be talking about in a few minutes. Next, the expectation that all departments participate. That means that nobody is exempt from having to make budget reductions, though it's important to note that cuts are not made across the board. Instead, we reduce proportionally. We reduce in accordance with your board's priorities, depending on revenue circumstances, and also in strong consideration of any service level impacts that may result from reductions. Next, we'll continue to make mid-year reductions as necessary. This approach is one that we've used in the past, and depending on what happens at the state level, this may be something that we'll use again in the future. And finally, we will continue to engage with various employee associations as personnel costs make up over 60% of our budget. And to date, and we've discussed this before, we've seen great success with working with our employees to control our personnel costs. Moving on to our short-term approaches, these are ones that help to address the immediate budget concerns, but they're really not sustainable in the longer term. And again, in accordance with our pain plan, the use of these short-term options has been scaled back each year over the last several years. Notable short-term approaches have in the past and will continue to include 2009 stimulus program. And finally, we'll continue to carefully use some of our one-time reserves as a strategy for balancing our budget. Last but not least, I think it's important to touch on some of the approaches that have not been included in our budget balancing strategies and approaches. And it continues to be staff's recommendation that we do not use any of these items. First, mandatory time off, or also known as furloughs. This is a strategy that obviously many other governments have used in recent years. In recognizing the impact that this poses to our customers at a time when they need government the most, we're very fortunate that we have not had to institute furlough days. We also haven't cut our training budgets. And again, this is in recognition of the fact that when the workforce is decreasing, it's even more and more important to maintain a skilled workforce than it has been in the past. And finally, we haven't pursued any opportunities to increase revenues. So at this point, that concludes our overview of our budget goals and policies and budget balancing strategies and approaches. And so I wanted to take any questions that the board has at this point before we move on to discussing the board priorities for next fiscal year.
A quick question,
sure.
Ms. Jackson, relative to the industry standard, if you will, of having a 20% reserve. I'm curious, we maintain about a 4% in a contingency, but we also have a significant amount of reserve, and I'm wondering which reserves you actually use to come up with that 20%, because if we add the roughly $15 million in contingency that we have, 4%, and then I think we're at about $80 million in reserves, but some are open reserves or ones that can be used for a variety of things, discretionary, I guess, and others are not. And I'm wondering how you come up with the 20%, because it seems to be a lot more than that, actually.
Yeah, actually, we have a few slides to that if you pull those up, Emily. Contingencies are included in that figure, in the 20% figure. And similar to what we've done in the past, we look at reserves and designations in three categories. This first one is the restricted use, which is about $20 million, and we do not count those in this calculation because we do not have flexibility to redirect that money to help balance the bottom line. There are legal requirements with respect to how those must be spent. If you go to the next slide, we do include these. However, there would be, you know, some challenge in spending some of this. This is generally earmarked for a number of projects, but it certainly could be redirected. Should things go further south, we could, redirect money for fire equipment replacement, building and automation replacement that could be used to help fund the bottom line, even though it is planned to earmarked for something else. And then the last, and so there's about $63 million there. Then the last slide, as you can see, is the tax reduction reserve, a little over $12 million, which is intended to serve as a rainy day fund, if you will, and is not planned for any type of use. So contingencies and then these last two slides are what are used to calculate that percent.
Okay, good. Thank you. Any other questions from my colleagues at this point? I see none. So, Ms. Jackson, if you want to proceed then.
Actually, I think I'll just jump in here real quick and discussing your board's priorities. Just wanted, this is the last component of today's presentation is to revisit and reconfirm your board's priorities. As you can see here, first and foremost is to meet all legal mandates. Second is to meet our debt service requirements, keep our creditors whole so that we can access the credit market again in the future. And then the third priority is public safety as defined by these four operations noted on this slide: the sheriff, district attorney, probation, and county fire operations. We have had these in place for a few years, and given that we are moving into year six of our seven pain plan and progressing through it rather methodically, our recommendation was to keep the policies and strategies the same and want to check in with your board regarding priorities.
Very good. Thank you. Any comments? I'll open it to the public. I have no request to speak on this item, so I'll close it to the public. Bring it back to my colleagues on the board. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the admin staff's bringing these to us again. It is part of a cycle that has become familiar now, even as we've wrestled with some very difficult challenges. But I think our success in wrestling with those challenges is based largely on a solid set of policies, and it seems to me that we will be working through the sixth year and hopefully the seventh year. Well, I just have a couple more comments. If staff might find the graphic showing how we have done that a lot, try to get a positive sense of the future. I know it looked a little like this when we were working years previous.
Yeah. Thank you, Supervisor Gibson. You're right about that. It's a pyramid, right? And all the energy that
Something with a bright rising sun and a path to glory or something like that.
We'll see what we can come up with for our next update.
Okay. you have very creative people in your office, I know. I'm looking forward to seeing the next one. Supervisor Meacham.
And we've always enjoyed seeing your animations
yeah.
that accompany the budgets and things. So I'm glad Supervisor Gibson raised the issue relative to reserves and contingencies, because I think that everything, not only from a financial standpoint, but I believe everything in life is cyclical. And sometimes the valleys are a little longer than the peaks, but I think we get there. They've been I think the county's done a pretty good job of trying to manage debt, and that's what I wanted to make a quick comment on. Debt in itself is not a bad thing if it's managed debt. For example, your home, if you have a mortgage and you can afford that mortgage, that's managed debt. If you can't, that's not. Credit card debt is not sometimes well managed. And I think the other thing that's important to recognize is the county's bond rating. The bond rating has a direct reflection on the bottom line. It's almost like an interest rate. You have bad credit rating, you're not going to get a good interest rate. The county has a very good bond rating that allows us to basically refinance our pension obligation in the past to a lesser percentage rate. So all the folks that work in our different financial areas and the admin on down, I think, are very, very aware of and pay close attention to being very conservative for this county. And I know that my colleagues, and myself included, have gone to different county meetings, CSAC, California Association of Counties, other events that we've attended, and we rank right up there with the best. So my compliments to staff.
In my opinion, we are the best. You're absolutely right, Supervisor Meacham. If I recall, just this past year, we refinanced our pension obligation bond. We were able to reduce the interest because of our excellent credit rating, and it saves the county about $200,000 a year just through that effort. And we talk about the seven-year pain plan, and what we're looking at now is the fiscal year 13-14 budget. That's what we're beginning to build. That pain plan, as it was called then, was actually put in place in the fall of 2007, and we've methodically worked through it, implemented it as designed, and it served us extremely well. And I appreciate the CAO's office and all the staff, all the department heads, and Ms. Daniels is here representing our largest bargaining unit, our county employees, who work together to really get through this economic downturn and leave us in fine fiscal position. This year, we did begin rebuilding some of those reserves, and we're building them back up. And because we have them, we were able to get through this period as well as we have. And as Supervisor Meacham said, manage debt. It's a managed fiscal program in its entirety that have really brought us through this period. So thank you, Ms. Jackson. Thank you, Mr. Buckshy. And I'll ask my colleagues for a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve staff's recommendation. We approve the budget goals and policies and implement the balancing strategies and approaches that have been approved.
Second.
Very good. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes. Thank you. Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item, please?
Item number 16, a request to approve the San Luis Obispo County Off-Highway Motor Vehicle In-Lieu Fee Fund Proposal Evaluation Criteria.
Thank you. And Curtis Black, will you be presenting this item?
Yes, I will. Thank you, Chair Patterson, members of the Board of Supervisors. I'm Curtis Black, your Deputy Director for County Parks. Just about to get our... There we go. Today we have a report to review for the criteria to be used when we evaluate proposals for the Off-Highway Vehicle In-Lieu Fee Fund funding distributions. On August 7th, your Board approved a distribution plan for these funds as we receive them from the state annually. That date, your board directed that 60% of the approximate $160,000 annual funding would be directed toward outside agencies and nonprofit groups. 40% would be directed towards county departments and agencies. These internal groups would be funded directly through Pickles Recreate. Second category is habitat restoration as it relates to repairing damage due to off-highway vehicle use or relocating existing trails. Third category is for law enforcement projects that help to assist agencies in enforcing laws or regulations that control off-highway vehicle operation. And the fourth category is the projects and programs that help educate and enhance safety for the operation of off-highway vehicles. Staff surveyed the state and regional agencies and compared criteria that used in similar programs. All proposals must meet the public resource code. Staff also recommends these general criteria for applications regardless of what category they come through. One, proposals must be received on or before their due date. They must be complete and address all elements requested. They must be from a public agency or a nonprofit corporation, and if they're from that nonprofit, they must provide proof of their nonprofit status. The proposals must provide a complete project. It can be part of a phased project if the proposed phase provides a complete result that's able to stand and be used on its own. And the final general one is that they must provide 5 copies of their proposal and deliver them to county parks in the GSA building. Agencies and nonprofits will provide proposals for one of those categories, and then each proposal will be evaluated on those general criteria, and it's recommended these following 3 criteria also. One is that the proposal provides funding from other sources that would be used to match or combine with the requested funds. Second one is that what number of off-highway vehicle users would be benefited from the proposed project. And the third one that would be matched is what is the agency or group's experience or past performance in completing similar grant-funded projects. So now going into the specific categories, we would recommend one additional criterion for the acquisition, operations, and maintenance category. And that is, to what extent the proposal sustains existing or increases off-highway vehicle recreation opportunities and facilities, or provides motorized access to non-motorized recreation. That last part there is a little confusing for people, and what it's intended to do is, if the proposal might improve or create a off-highway vehicle trail that leads to an area where they might have other recreation, like they might go fishing, camping, hiking, but so it's both types of projects would fit into that category. Two additional criteria are focused for the restoration category. One is which proposal provides additional consideration that will restore areas that have a high potential for the most significant damage. That is, what territory this trail might go through. This would be important when we have existing trails and facilities that are in forests or parks that receive a high number of off-highway vehicle users, and there's a good potential for operators to move off-trail. The second one for this is that proposals must ensure that funds will not be used for any work that's really maintenance of existing trails or development of new trails. Those uses would be in that first category for acquisition, operations, and maintenance. A recommendation is for one additional criterion for the law enforcement category, and that is that would be to consider the extent that the project would enhance the enforcement of laws and regulations related to operation and use of off-highway vehicles. It should be noted that of all the 4 categories, this is the only one that requires a periodic audit of the use to ensure the use of the funds were spent as required. So staff will need to prepare for audits a minimum of once every 5 years to ensure compliance with this part of the code. An additional criterion is recommended for education and safety category, and this is one would consider the extent and reach of the proposal, how it promotes education of rules and regulations related to responsible and safe operation of off-highway vehicles. In summary, staff sees the recommended general and specific criteria as useful to assist in ranking proposals that are received from outside agencies and nonprofit groups. With the board's direction, staff will implement these criteria to provide Parks and Recreation Commission a more clear picture of the proposed projects, and this should lead to a well-managed and transparent distribution of the funds set aside for the external groups. Staff recommends that the board approve the attached off-highway motor vehicle in lieu fee fund proposed evaluation criteria. And that completes our presentation for you. We're available for questions.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Black. Just
placing that additional language in there likely doesn't strengthen that obligation and the intent to do so. Staff feels like the recommended language is adequate for that purpose.
Okay, good. Yeah. Thank you. And then the source?
The additional items.
The
additional items, we met with administration, and we had some of those general ones in mind that, you know, being on time, being complete, and those like that. The other three are very good programs being run in Kern County, and those three were part of that program as well. Mm-hmm. So staff felt that it was important for us to go ahead and include those in each criteria.
Very good. Thank you. I have no more questions from my colleagues. I will open it to the public. I do have a couple of requests to speak. Julie Tackard, followed by Dennis Flaw.
Good morning. I am Julie Tacker, and I look forward to the proposals that are put forward by the nonprofits and the agencies that are interested in receiving some of these grant funds. What I recall in the August 7th meeting and discussion, it was a lot about emergency services. I see the Public Resource Code speaks very much to law enforcement, but not necessarily to emergency services or fire services. And we talked about having CAL FIRE reviewing the proposals. I see that the proposals are going to go to the Parks and Rec Commission. That makes sense. Is there a mechanism that CAL FIRE will be looking at those proposals? And then the kind of last question I had was, the very end of the Public Resources Code, where it speaks to education and safety, it says 5% of the funds appropriated by the legislature pursuant to Subdivision A, yada, yada, yada. The I'm curious if what we're doing here, if that 5% is in the $160,000 number, or is that in that 60% that we're talking about. So if I can get those questions answered, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. Dennis Law.
Yes, thank you, members of the board. My name is Dennis Law, and I'm speaking here today as a member of the Central Coast Motorcycle Association, speaking on behalf of the Central Coast Motorcycle Association. First off, we want to thank you and Mr. Black, the Department of Recreation, for developing a very sound, reasonable program that will provide for order and provide for fairness in the appropriation of funds. Off-road vehicle users pay into these funds. They pay fee of $4 per off-road registration, so we have a direct interest in seeing to it that the funds are properly placed. And this program does that, and I should add that not all counties do this type of thing, so you're exemplary once again in developing a program of this nature. In a letter that I wrote to you, I did make one suggestion, and that has to do with the preference given to the use of funds for OHV purposes. The funds can also be used to develop motorized access for non-motorized use, but the statute doesn't use the same language. It doesn't indicate that there's a preference for those types of uses. We feel that most likely the criteria that's been proposed will be followed with that intent, if you will. But a suggestion is that it could be helpful to add some language into the criterion to indicate the preference for for OHV uses that the statute provides. So I'll leave it at that. Again, I want to thank you very much for the program you've developed and for the opportunity to comment on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Law. And I do want to mention that it was really the Central Coast Motorcycle Association and others who really instigated the idea of establishing a policy, and we appreciate your efforts over the years to really define how we best distribute them. So thank you and your association for that input.
Thank you very much.
Okay. That concludes my request to speak on this item, so I'll close it to the public and bring it back to the board. Thank you. And then the question about CAL FIRE review, and if it's in the forest, the National Forest, the U.S. Forest Service, do they have an opportunity through the process to weigh in on project applications?
Absolutely. We have to wait and see which proposals we receive, and if we receive one, we'll follow board's direction and make sure it gets over to CAL FIRE for review prior to being assembled with the other proposals coming to the Parks and Rec Commission.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Supervisor Hill.
If there aren't any further questions, I just wanted to comment that I think the proposal's good. I'm glad that we set the share at 60-40, and I'm prepared to move ahead and make the motion to approve it.
I just have a quick question.
Okay. Supervisor Meacham.
Relative to Mr. Law's comments, was there verbiage that the board wanted to consider?
Well, I had asked Mr. Black if he felt that that was relevant. I mean, Mr. Law raised that question about, and it's in his letter, the preference versus consideration, that preference to applications that sustain OHV use and give consideration to motorized access. It just sort of sets a priority there.
It does provide some level of priority, I suppose. I believe in our commitment to be following 5090.5 that we're committed to that general ranking.
Okay.
Again, though, we may just get a fantastic proposal that is for access to, and it may get ranked, you know, by Park and Rec Commission for funding, and we wouldn't necessarily want to tie hands just on that fine bit of wording that's in the code.
And it is necessary, obviously, to be consistent with state law.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Supervisor Gibson.
I was going to argue similarly for flexibility at the local level. That's something we cherish here, and I think that with these as guidelines, we're pointed in the right direction as to how we split it between the public and the private entities. I think we need to be adaptive, and so maximum flexibility.
Yes, that's good job, Mr. Black, and your staff. Yes. Supervisor Hill?
Oh, no, I made the motion waiting for a second.
I'll second it.
Okay.
Mr.
All right.
Doesn't need to argue it.
Moved and
okay.
seconded.
No?
Okay.
Absolutely not.
To adopt staff's recommendation, and I'll ask the clerk to call roll.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
And Mr. Patterson?
Yes. Okay. Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item, please?
Item number 17, a request to certify the Napomo Community Park Master Plan Final Program Environmental Impact Report in accordance with the California Environmental Quality Act, Public Resources Code Section 21000, and adopt the Napomo Community Park Master Plan.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. And who's going to lead off here? Mr. Cooper?
Yes.
You're going to be the point person on this one?
Yep.
Okay. Have at it.
Good morning, Chairman Patterson and members of the board. This morning we're here to discuss the Napomo Park Master Plan and EIR certification.
Our clerk's
messing with us.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I don't mind it going backwards.
Now I'll open it to public comment.
Similar brevity.
Thank you.
I hope you didn't blink during that presentation.
Okay, there we go. Recommendation to certify the Napomo Park EIR and adopt the Community Park Master Plan. Since our agenda item was published, we've had multiple comments, and in particular, we had a 26-page comment letter submitted yesterday by the Napomo Park Conservancy, submitted by their attorney, which we met with County Council to discuss the items in that comment letter and met again this morning and decided that we would make a recommendation that this item be continued to a later date, but so staff will have an opportunity to address the issues in that letter. We'd like to proceed today, though, with our staff presentation, take public testimony on the item, open it up for questions, and then discuss the potential for a continuation based on staff's ability to have time to address the items in that 26-page letter. So the Napomo Community Park is centrally located in the community of Napomo. This is an aerial photograph of the site. It is bordered by West Teft Street that is the off-ramp off of 101 for access. That's the main access to the park. Also bordered by Pomeroy Road. You can see in the center there the big oak woodland area that will be preserved. You can see the lines through there of the existing trails. Down in the lower right-hand corner, you can see most of the development that exists, the ball fields, tennis courts, and then down adjacent to that area, there's an open kind of the tan area, which is more open area, which will be where the future development will occur. The existing uses out at Napomo Park currently are the Napomo Library, and there's a temporary preschool, which is also known as Little Bits Preschool, which is managed by Napomo Recreation Association. We have existing ball fields, tennis courts, which are lighted, playgrounds, dog park, Napomo Native Garden, multiple trails, both unpaved and more informal trails through the oak woodland areas, and open play turf and natural areas. Napomo Park has never had a master plan. It's been implemented over the years, kind of piecemeal, so it's important for us to have a master plan to guide the future of this park as the population grows in Napomo to meet not only the current needs but also the future growth needs of Napomo. Typically, a master plan will serve a 20-year time frame, and it will incorporate the needs of the community, the needs and wants in the community, and which would include a range of activities, including passive use and active recreation. We also want to identify the features in the park that need to be upgraded and maintained, some of the facilities that may be deficient, where we can make improvements to enhance those facilities or add other facilities. So a master plan basically manages the recreation needs of a community, both for the current use and future. The process for developing this master plan began in 2003. We started out with community surveys to get an idea of what people wanted in the community of Napomo. We had a survey conducted, a mail survey of over 3,000 surveys that went out to the community, random sampling, and determined what types of facilities people wanted to see in Napomo Park. We also had meetings and workshops where we presented concept plans based on their input from the workshops and community surveys. Once we developed the concept plans, we presented those back to the community to get input on the proposed designs and be able to tweak them in a way that would meet the needs of the community. In 2007, it was determined that an environmental impact report would be required for this project. And then we began the EIR process with a scoping meeting in December of 2009, which was an opportunity to gain community input, again, for the types of impacts that may be caused by the proposed recreation facility improvements. A draft EIR was prepared and released to the public in February of this year, in which we received public comments, which were addressed and incorporated into the final EIR, which was presented to the Parks and Recreation Commission in August of this year. Parks and Recreation Commission recommended that the board certify that EIR and adopt the master plan. This graphic here shows the existing park, and then the purple area shows the areas where new improvements would be incorporated into the park. Majority of them centrally located where the ball fields would be, where the arrow is now, and then community center would be centrally located with support facilities. And then a little you can see where the new improvements would be. Down the green is the sports fields, and then the central core shows where the community center and other improvements would be within the community park master plan. I'm going to turn it over to Elizabeth now, who is going to go over the needs of the Napomo community and take you through the environmental review process of the master plan.
Thank you. Part of the reason for taking on the master plan was that the community of Napomo was underserved for active recreation. So we took a look at, started this master plan program with the goal to provide recreation to the community. Current demographics as of Census 2012 show there's about 16,700 people in Napomo today. Over a quarter of those people are under the age of 18. So I feel that that's showing that there's quite a demand for recreation. Our park and rec element calls for 3 acres of community parkland per 1,000 people. So based on that calculation, the community of Napomo should have about 50 acres of community park. And community park land is defined by our park and rec element as more active in nature, providing greater active recreation, typical features including the ones that you see in this project, sports fields, skate parks, ball fields, swimming pool, tennis courts, and trails. This park has currently got 15 acres of active recreation. We went forward with what's called a program EIR. And why we went forward with a program EIR is for several reasons. This is a 20-year plan, and within those 20 years, things may change. So the program EIR took a look at how this project would affect the community and the impacts around it, or the resources around it. It's also a concept plan. This master plan is concept, and the fact that some of the details, including the community center or the exact layout of the ball fields, isn't nailed down yet. So the program EIR was well suited for the fact that it was a concept plan. And finally, this program EIR allows us to tier off of this EIR for some of the other bigger components, such as the community center. We can use the data in this program EIR and then do another subsequent document that's more specific to, say, the community center. Another thing the master plan is able to do is look at the effects as a whole of this project would create as a whole, while allowing us flexibility in design details and grading schematics and those kind of things. This is a program EIR, as I mentioned. It covers your typical EIR sections. There were no Class 1 impacts in this EIR. There was a fair amount of Class 2 impacts. Most of them are mitigated in the mitigated table that's presented in your staff report. And this EIR also studied two alternatives, a Nipomo Park Master Plan, Alternative A, which is similar to the master plan, and Alternative B, which is a scaled-down version. Throughout this process, we've heard that there's a fair amount of comments on these main topics here. I would say the bulk of the comments I've fielded here are about open space versus recreational facilities. The community of Nipomo, or people in the community of Nipomo, hold that oak woodland area really dear. It's well used. It's endeared to them. While at the other hand, more than 50% of the survey that we created, we did do a survey in 2003, sent out, I believe it was 3,000 households. Got over 500 responses back. It's a statistically valid survey that showed that active recreational facilities are needed in the community, and that's backed up by our own formula in the park and rec element for community park activities. So that's one of the main issues is open space versus recreational facilities. The park, as proposed, the master plan as proposed, will build out about less than a third of the actual park itself with recreational facilities, leaving almost 100 acres in open space and trail areas. So we feel that this plan strikes that balance. The community center also turned into be an issue of concern for some community members. Traffic came up as one of the concerns with this community center. The EIR took a look at that and identified that staggering use of noise related to the sports field will not spill over into the neighbors to a significant impact.
And again, the recommendation, which will likely be continued to the next meeting, would be to certify the EIR for the Nipomo Park Master Plan and adopt the Community Park Master Plan. So at this point, we'd like to open it up for questions of staff.
Mr. Cooper, are you going to recommend continuance to a date certain or off calendar? What's the thinking on that?
We had looked at our schedule, the board schedule, and it looks like December 18th would be a potential date.
Okay, good. Are there any questions from my colleagues at this point for staff? I see none. I am going to open it to the public. I have well over an hour of public testimony here. If everybody speaks their full 3 minutes, I do want to emphasize if the board does decide to continue this item to a date certain, there will be public comment allowed then as well. So you will have an opportunity to address the issue again. Yes, Supervisor Gibson first, I guess. Yeah. Supervisor Gibson.
I think Supervisor are thinking with the same head here. I wonder if we could get a little reading from staff, whether it be Parks or County Council, that might inform the question of continuance and thus might inform people's desire for public comment.
We can certainly do that. And that was your thought, too, exactly. Supervisor Meacham. Okay. County Council, would you like to opine on that, please?
Yes. Good morning, Rita Neal, your County Council. As Sean had mentioned, in the last few days, we've received quite a few comments from the public, and yesterday received a 26-page letter from Council for the Nipomo Park Conservancy. Although we believe a lot of those issues, particularly raised in that correspondence of yesterday, can be addressed and will be addressed by staff, we felt it best that the matter could be continued so that staff could come back with a supplemental staff report, address those issues, and clarify some of the questions that were raised. However, we also feel it's necessary today to take public comment so that if any other substantive issues come up that need to be addressed at a continued hearing, we can address those in this interim period. So we're trying to balance getting providing enough information so that the board can act on this item, responding to questions that have been raised, but giving staff enough time to clarify the record for today.
Very good. Supervisor Hill.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up on that, what Ms. Neal said, if I could, and that's just an appeal to the folks that are here with us today, which is we haven't had a chance to really look at the letter other than we've seen it that was given to us late yesterday. So in all interests of us making a decision at some point in December, unless there's new information today, I think that it's probably better if you either gave us new information today. We've received, obviously, you know, almost two binders worth of comments. So if you're just reiterating that, you might save that for when we actually come back to the hearing in December, where it will be fresher and won't have, you know, a month worth of hearings between that. So that's just my sense of it. And then we'll also have a chance to meet with staff to talk about the letter from the Park Conservancy Council.
Okay. Thank you, Supervisor Hill. Mr. Black.
Yeah, thank you, Curtis Black, Deputy Director of County Parks. We did have the opportunity to speak with Jason Giffen, Director for Planning, and he does intend to move a project that he had scheduled for December 18th to a date forward, allowing us the opportunity to place this onto December 18th for certain.
Okay, very good. Thank you. So having that input, I will open it to the public, and we certainly do want to give everyone who desires to speak to this item today that opportunity. But again, you will have an opportunity again when it comes back to the board. The first request to speak is Pandora Nash Carner, followed by William Dorland.
Good morning, honorable board members, members of staff, and the public. I'm Pandora Nash Carner, speaking as a park commissioner, and I'm going to save my comments until the next meeting, except to say that the Park Commission urges you to ratify the EIR and to support the master plan.
Thank you. Very good. Thank you, Ms. Nash Carner. When I call your name, please come forward.
Reflects thought and consideration to the concerns and desires of the community, and we really appreciate that. And I want to encourage the board, as this matter is further considered, to think of the what is really in the best interest of the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dorland. Star Holiday, followed by Fred Olson. Holiday?
Good afternoon, almost. My name is Istar Holiday. I am a resident of the community, the Napoma Mesa, a member of the community, a very active member for the last 25 years. And I'm speaking here today as an individual. I'm not representing anybody but myself. These are my personal opinions. I've been listening to Ms. Kavanaugh's presentation, and I think that she needs to come down and spend some time in Napomo, because some of the things I hear are not consistent with what I see and I experience every day going through Napomo. I don't know what the rush has been. Does Napomo need a community center? Absolutely. Should it be in the Napomo Park? Absolutely not. And there are many good reasons for not placing it in the park. One of the problems being that law enforcement is absolutely opposed to having any kind of community center like this in the park. We have two cars patrolling all of the South County, and the Sheriff's Department has already reported publicly that they cannot supervise anything going on in the center of the park. We have a water crisis, and you're taking away, to pave over almost a third of the park, you're taking away all that permeable land for reprocessing rainwater into, God willing, groundwater. We have had an unconscionable rush on this project. The rec center lost its venue in many years ago and was compensated generously through the actions of Supervisor Teixeira, who was a member of the board of the Napomo Rec Center, was a member of the Board of Education when it compensated the rec center for its loss of venue, was the park commissioner when this master plan was being pushed, and of course is now our supervisor. And here we have the first meeting that ran after that random survey, which very few people have ever heard of, and which the results have not been published. I requested them. I was not afforded any copy of it. And here we are on election day for this meeting, and you're planning another meeting during the Christmas season. It seems very coincidence? I think not, is what I'm trying to say. So I urge you, I'm glad there's a continuance suggested, but I urge you to read carefully all of those objections to the placement of this large community center in the park. And I would urge the Napomo Rec Center, for whom my daughter worked and my grandchildren attended, and I loved them, to use the money they got in the fundraising to take advantage of some of the four sites that were recommended to them in Napomo and create that community center, just Thanks. Not in the master park.
Thank you, Ms. Holliday.
You.
Fred Olson, followed by Gene Taylor. Mr.
Good morning.
Olson.
I'm Fred Olson, Chairman Patterson, members of the board. I'll keep it very brief. We were fortunate enough to have the survey mailed to our house, and we filled it out and returned it, so we're one of the 500. We're also equestrians. Our recollection of the survey is that the questions were posed in a way that it was difficult to say no. So are we in favor of additional recreational facilities for the youth in Napomo? Absolutely, no doubt. So we answered yes. Are we in favor of covering the park with pavement? Absolutely not. The park is a diamond. It's a gem. If we change it, we'll never be able to change it back. That's all.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Gene Taylor, followed by Harry Waltz.
Okay, I get to say good afternoon. It is noon. And my name is Gene Taylor. I'm in Napomo. No, I don't normally look like this. I have to apologize. I'm sorry. Halloween is over. I tend to fall down. 13, 14 years ago, I never heard of Napomo. And my realtor kept putting me down South County. And I'm learning that, okay, there is such a place. It's a nice, quiet little community, very user-friendly. And the park was a main selling point in my purchasing my property in Black Lake Mobile Estates, which is within walking distance of the park. I have over the years been able to take my special needs niece over there, and this in Serenity, they enjoy it. They go there instead of church. I know several people that do. And I'm also speaking for most of my neighbors that use the park, that walk over there, that take their dog to the dog park, which unfortunately more often than not is closed due to parvo and some other things. It's just, I enjoy listening to Touchdown Cowboys. I mean, I get the lights, I get the noise. I moved there knowing the park was there, and I appreciate it the way it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Harry Walls, followed by Nancy Marone.
Harry Walls of Napomo. I'm the president of Napomo Parks Conservancy, and each of you has received our packet, our handout that includes the history of this project. And I'll keep my comments brief and wait until December. I do have 14 additional letters from residents that are opposed to the Napomo Park Master Plan, and I'd like that to be added to the record now, please.
Thank you, Mr. Walls. Nancy Marone, followed by Mary Squilotti.
All right. My name is Nancy Marone, and I'm a resident of Napomo since 1999.
I'll reserve most of my comments for the next meeting. I'm very disappointed. I was really excited about today. I've been involved in many meetings regarding the master plan for the community park over the years. And I, too, have a list of 20 residents that are in support of the master plan for the community park. And I have worked in Parks and Recreation. I've worked in a park up in Sacramento in an unincorporated area, county park, that had a community center, a pool, classrooms, sports fields, and open space. And I enjoyed working in that park, and it was safe, and it was wonderful for all the residents. And I feel 100 acres of open space is a lot of open space that we can still all enjoy, and we do all love the park. But we're looking at 20 years ahead, and we are way behind in the facilities that are needed for a very healthy, happy community. So I will be seeing you at the next meeting. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Marone. Mary Scolati, followed by Cynthia Hawley.
Good afternoon. Thank you for this opportunity today. I've been a resident of San Luis Obispo County for over 40 years and lived in Napomo for 14 years. I'm a mother and a grandmother who uses the park often, and I also have had the privilege over my career to teach, counsel, do social work, and be an administrator working with children and families. Most of my career has been with low-income families and children at risk. And I think that all of us know that a busier child, a child who's involved in more activities, equals a healthier child who also has more confidence in themselves and more self-esteem and more opportunities to develop themselves. What I see now in the park that exists for young people is wonderful, but I also am in full support of the master plan because I think there is a lot of room for growth, that we do need more sports fields. At the present time, we have to rent from Lucia Mar. We need to rent their gymnasiums, their fields, and it makes the fees go up for children to play these sports. So I am very much in favor of it, and I look forward to coming back in December and talking more about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Quilotti, and good to see you, by the way. Cynthia Hawley, followed by Douglas, looks like Milhorn.
Good afternoon. I'm Cynthia Hawley, here today as attorney for the Napomo Parks Conservancy. And the first thing I would like to do is ask everyone in the audience who is in favor of protecting the existing passive recreation park and denying this plan and the EIR to stand. Next, I would like to augment the record with some documents to back up.
Please speak in the mic so we can get it on the record.
I'm augmenting the record with documents that back up the letter that I wrote. One of the biggest things, and it reminded me of it when you were talking about it, is that the conflict between open space and recreation. And it doesn't. There's two things wrong with that. First of all, it's not just open space. It is recreation. It's what we've got there is like one of the last vests planned. There was no analysis done of an alternative site. And because of that, we've got open space, actually not open space, but passive recreation against active recreation. And I bet you anything, you'd see a fraction of the people here today if that weren't the case. If this was being built on another site, you know, you'd see people here interested in water here today, because that would be the main, if everything else was legal, that would be the main problem, and that problem would still exist. But what you've got is unnecessary. You don't have to have all these people battling. I don't think there's anybody in this crowd who wants to say, no, I don't want to see parks for kids. I don't want to make sure. I don't want to have ball fields for kids. Of course people do. Of course people want a community center, but they don't want you to take away the treasured last postage stamp of open trails for passive recreation on the Napomo Mesa.
Thank you, Ms. Hawley.
Thank you.
Douglas Milhorn, followed by Dan Allen Gaddis.
Good afternoon. I'm a longtime resident of Pomo. I'm also the president of Pomo Recreation. I'm also a parent to four kids. This has been a long process. I don't think anybody anticipated, you know, when we started this, that our 20-year plan would take almost 20 years to, you know, determine how the plan is going to work. And maybe we should just get started on the next 20 years. But, you know, at this point, keep in mind, 3,200 students go to school in Nipomo. We have no active recreation for those kids. Okay, that's a third of our Lucia Marr School District. They have nothing to do after school. Okay, and since our former community center, we lost access to that. That's been 9 years that we've had of we've let down our kids because, honestly, they have nothing to do. They have nothing positive to go do, and that creates other problems, which I'm sure you guys are well aware of. They get into drugs. They get into gangs, and we have other problems that we deal with. The time to deal with that is in their teens, you know, positive things to do. I've been doing this for a long time. I've been a coach for 10 years, a ref for 10 years. It's disappointing to live in Nipomo and not have the support and facilities to make things work. Okay, so, I mean, I know, you know, you got a lot of people standing here, but I also want you to look at the demographics of the people standing. People who need this are out, you know, working right now because, you know, it takes pretty much two incomes to support a person, you know, support a family in this area. So we're busy raising our kids. And when I'm up here right now, there's a long line of all these, you know, 3,200 people and their family. They're right behind me right here, but they're working right now, okay? This is a work day. I took the day off because I know this is important. It's important to me. It's important to my kids. I don't really expect that this is going to happen in time to, you know, have my kids avail themselves of it, but maybe their kids will, and we owe it to the community. Okay, I feel like I've failed the community for 9 years, and if you guys don't feel the same way, then, you know, there's something wrong here, because this is something, and, you know, we took this survey in 2000, this 12 years ago or whatever. The needs haven't changed. They've gotten worse. You know, we have less space. You know, this is an opportunity for us to have, you know, this be a uniting factor in our community. It could be the center of our community. We can bring in the Hispanic community. You know, this is an opportunity for Nipomo to be united, and I just really urge you guys to, you know, look at the big picture, look at the needs that, you know, our kids are already underserved and how many we've already lost. So I don't want to lose any more. I hope you guys don't. Nipomo, we're kind of like the redhead stepchild in the county sometimes, you know, but it's time for us. We deserve it. And I really look forward to, you know, next month, you know, coming here again. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And would you state your name for the record, please?
I would. It's Douglas Milhorn.
Thank you. Dan Allen Gaddis, followed by Jennifer Miller.
Good afternoon. My name is Dan Allen Gaddis. I'm speaking to you as a resident of Pomo and not as a representative of any organization. On today's agenda, item 17 is the Nipomo Community Park Master Plan, Final Program Environmental Impact Report, EIR, recommended for approval by the Parks and Recreation Commission, which calls for a community center gymnasium of 36,000 square feet to be located deep in the center of the park, where it would not be visible from major roads on a drive-by from a patrol car. The master plan option specifics are shown in the EIR Executive Summary pages ES 6 and 7. A County Parks and Nipomo Community Advisory Council, NCAC, joint public town hall meeting was held in July 2004 at the Nipomo High School Auditorium on planning for the Nipomo Community Park. At that July 2004 meeting, I recall that a Sheriff's Department commander told those in attendance that only one patrol car is on patrol in the South County, Central Obispo County area at night, like signage, facility design, sufficient lighting, doors meeting safety requirements. These measures do not address the difficulty of patrol community center located deep in the center of the park, not visible with a patrol car. If you, our Board of Supervisors, do approve the inclusion of a community center in the Nipomo Community Park, please vote to approve the Master Plan Alternative A, where the community center would be located on the edge of Nipomo Community Park at Teff Street, where a patrol car can easily drive by, spot any possible gang-related, drug-related, or any other suspicious activity. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gaddis. Jennifer Miller, followed by Jane Peterson.
Hi. I'm thankful that I had this opportunity to speak a little bit. I'm going to kind of be real brief about my comments since we are going to continue this conversation. I want to say that I am proud to be a third-generation native Atascadero-an, and my husband is fourth-generation Napomo, and our families are pioneering families in this area that we call and have the privilege of calling home. And we cannot, any of us in this room, deny the blessings that we have of the beautiful surroundings. And that being said, I live directly on the corner of Teft and Pomeroy. We are in the Miller House, the old farmhouse, that the little dump. But we, my husband and I, chose to move there because we know the importance of raising our children in a rural, small community. What our kids need is parent involvement, not facilities. Last night I did an informal survey of my own, since I went through all of this stuff. Read it all. I've done my due diligence. And, you know, I asked my 11-year-old, and we play sports. I do my chair time at I've been the soccer mom. I've been the referee when somebody doesn't show up or whatever. I have children that are of the age that we are involved, and we're getting ready for basketball. And I asked him, I said, so guys, would you want to, my 11-year-old, hey, would you still want to play basketball if, we just played here in Napomo and we didn't travel and use gyms and we just played at the school? Oh, yeah. Well, they don't care. You know what they want? They want to play. You know what they really, really want? They want to look over and see the parent sitting at the sideline. They don't care if they're shooting the hoop off of our barn or the blacktop at the school or if they're in a gym. And, this is an important day. Decisions are going to be made today that will affect us and generations to come forever. And what's important? Fancy gyms? No, they don't care. It's parent involvement.
Yeah. So. Thank you. Would you state your name for the record, please?
Jennifer Miller.
Great. Thank you. Jane Peterson, followed by Ed Eby.
Hi. My name is Jane Peterson. I'm a 21-year resident of Napomo. I have in the past volunteered for the recreation department. I have coached girls softball. And for the rec department in Napomo, I did the children's theater for a number of years when it was in the old rec center on Frontage. Recreation is very, very important to our children. I'm also a 17-year teacher with the CMR Unified School District, now retired. I worked at both Dana and Napomo schools. Each year I would take my class on a nature walk, and we would look at wildflowers. We would look at all the grasses we could find growing. We would notice what wildlife we could see. And I cannot tell you how excited and curious and adventurous those kids were seeing those things. Nature is so important, and I am just so concerned. Our country has set aside national parks and state parks. Our county needs to set aside natural parks for our kids, for future generations. It's dwindling. It's going away. We're not going to have it forever if we don't protect it now. I also want to say that putting any development along Teft Street makes a whole lot more sense, so please look at the option. It makes a lot more sense than putting it in the middle of the park. We could even get more property over there by moving the dog park away from that area and give us more room along there to develop. I also want to say Dori Foreman was on the park committee when it first began many, many years ago. She is now undergoing chemotherapy and has cancer, but she told me that their original vision for the park was a natural area as well as a place to recreate. We need to keep that vision. This needs to stay natural. I don't want to see this turned into an overdevelopment.
Osage Street is not a street that you can get a vehicle into or out of the park. Neither are the two adjacent streets, Camino Caballo and Tejas. You have to drive clear around half a mile till you get to an entrance to the park from Osage. Osage widening coupled with this park development is it just is there's no nexus there. So you can solve this problem of getting rid of all of these ancient oak trees by just forgetting about widening Osage. The street's 10 years old. It's been doing fine for 10 years, and it'll save you a lot of problem with your environmental impact report. Because removal of these oak trees, if it must be done, is a Class 1 impact, contrary to what the EIR says. It is a Class 1 impact because you cannot mitigate killing 75 to 100-year-old oak trees by replacing them with seedlings. It takes 75 to 100 years before those seedlings grow up to be 75-year-old oak trees. So it's not a mitigation. It's a deferred mitigation. It's deferred for 75 years. Deferred mitigations are not permitted under CEQA. So that's the basic thing I was going to say. The other mitigations that are talked about in the EIR, if they still exist, and if this widening of Osage Road is still required when this comes back to you in December, I'll talk more about that. But save the oaks, please. And I'll leave that photograph for your records.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Eby. Jim Filson, followed by Rudy Stoll. I don't know if I have your last name right,
Jim. That is correct, Filson. Jim
okay,
Filson.
Very good. Thank you.
I'm a member of the Napomo community, and I'll, due to the fact that there's no decision going to be made today, I'm going to postpone my comments till the December 18th, although I urge a certification for the EIR. One question that I would ask that, if possible, the agenda item or meeting time frame be scheduled so that other working parents of our community can make it and provide supportive comments.
And that would be better earlier in the morning or later in the afternoon?
Later in the day, later in the day, where, you know, even after work hours, 4:35 o'clock, where we can schedule something. There's a lot of families that were, I was under the impression that it was going to be a later time. When I found out I had to schedule to be off work today to be here because it's important, and a lot of parents can, you know, let me know that they were really upset that they couldn't make it. So,
very good. Thank you. Let's see. Rudy Stoll. Rudy, are you here? No? How about Connie O'Henley? Connie, where are you? There you are. welcome. And then we have Commander Jim Taylor from the Sheriff's Department. You're up after Miss O'Henley.
Thank Connie. You. Connie O'Henley. I am here with several hats on. I am a parent of two teenage boys. I'm almost making it. I am the president of the Napomo Youth Football League, with 135 boys and all of their families spending 6 days a week at the park. And I'm also your 4th District Parks and Rec Commissioner. On behalf, as Vice Chair of that Parks and Rec Commission, I want to remind you that we, as a commission, we reviewed this multiple times. We asked lots of questions. We asked lots of clarification. We went to community meetings. We collected information. And I think that the master plan and its accompanying EIR really encompass everything that the community looks at, wants, and needs. And the beautiful thing is it's a 20-year build-out. It's a programmatic EIR. So I understand some of the concerns, and I think a lot of those concerns will get addressed as we move forward through the project phase of it. It's not meant to be started the day after this meeting, building projects. It's meant to set up a plan where we can go after funding, a plan where we can go after support, more ideas, readdress the community needs at the time when those projects go forward. So with this plan in place, it allows us to do all of that. I did have some concerns about the packet of information we received from the Parks Conservancy. There was a survey included in that, and when I received this at our commission meeting the other night, I went through it, and I thought it was rather interesting that as a resident of Napomo, I have never seen the survey. And so I had the opportunity over the weekend, as I spent the week with all of my football families, to ask them if they had seen it, had gotten it in the mail, and not one single person I've talked to has received that survey. So I would like to ask the group who was surveyed, how many surveys, what were returned, so we can have some statistical analysis of that before we look at it. Other than that, we'll be back in December. You know, I was fortunate enough to be able to shift my schedule. My work will still be sitting on my desk. Not everyone has that chance.
Commander Basti had recommended in 2006 that they use crime prevention through design, adequate lighting to prevent vandals and that sort of thing, but the location of where it's going to be presented inside the park is going to be key also. So if we can try to locate it along a thoroughfare, it would make it a lot easier on everybody. And that's all. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Commander Taylor, for being here this afternoon. Let's see. We have Ken Whittle followed by Pam Krall. Mr. Whittle.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Ken Whittle. Community at large, and I've been a part of this process for years, and my frustration lies in the 8 or 9 years and the process has taken me, and through the workshops, the surveys, the community involvement with reaching out and participating as chairman of the Pomo Recreation Association and a board member for 5 years, advisor to past supervisor Cacho Sajian as a park chairman committee member. I'm kind of tired. I've been working on this so long. I think that's my frustration. And I was afraid I was going to miss the December 18th meeting. And I was like, I want to come back, but I don't think I'm going to be able to make it back. I had to take the day off. And it's frustrating for me. I want this to happen at 9 and 10 and 11. And it's hard for me to understand the process. And so I'm here to just say that, you know, I'm kind of tired. And I really would like you guys to make a decision. And I strongly would like you to approve and certify the EIR. And Mrs. Kavanaugh has pointed out, quite frankly, that we are underserved. And if you look at the ratios of people in the community active recreation, the park, it is a gem, and I think we can have it both ways. It's 140 acres. You're only using actively like 15 acres of that right in the heart. Okay, well, we're not asking for much. We can have it both ways. We're not going to mess with the trails. We like the wooded area. We can work around the outsides. We can also have active recreation in the center. And this is a 20-year program. And the problem I'm having is I spent, you know, the 8 years to work on a 20-year program. Wow. That just doesn't add up. So thank you for your time. And I hope to be back, but I doubt. So thank you.
Okay. You can submit a letter or an email, Mr. Whittle, if you can't make it on the 18th. Pam Krall, followed by Dia Rudd.
Hi, Krall. I'm Pam Krall from San Luis Obispo. I'm speaking as a member of Ride Napomo because I trailer down to Napomo to ride fairly frequently, often with some friends from San Luis Obispo or Arroyo Grande. The proposal takes up a fairly significant footprint within the park, which, as you've heard, is quite a gem. And I would propose that if anything is taken for fields and whatnot, it should be put to the periphery so that the maximum number of trails can be maintained. That basically, there are a lot of equestrians in this area, in the general area, and the park is specifically located within a community segment that is equestrian-oriented. They've already lost a significant number of trails down there due to the golf and other housing developments. And the problem with trails and trail access is once we lose them, we never get them back. And they're living proof of that down there with the ones they've already lost. So the trails should be preserved and the open areas saved so that they are not reduced or lost by this proposed plan. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Krall. Dia Rudd, followed by Stephanie Green.
Hi, I'm Dia Rudd, and I am an equestrian. I'm also retired from the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Department and worked under Chief Basti. I find it very hard to believe that you would want to put a community center in the center of a park, which would give it more exposure or opportunity for crime to occur. Also, I am concerned that the EIR does not specify equestrians as a subclass of user of these trails. It marks them as paved or unpaved trails. I think they should be designated as equestrian users trails, and to maximize not losing trails, the amount of facilities that are being proposed to be built on the park could be placed elsewhere in the community. And in my opinion, I don't see any reason why the outlying ball fields can be used in the community and rented as good use of resources that aren't being used at specific times. To keep the park rural, once you build it, it's gone. And with the woodlands is like no other, and that's why we all come here. That's why we all came to this community, was because of the ruralness of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rudd. Stephanie Green, followed by Barbara, and you'll have to coach me on your last name.
They came to every one of these meetings, and I finally stood up after several meetings and discussions, and I said, I don't want A, B, C. I want D, none of the above. And we did this meeting after meeting. I did this. I stood up meeting after meeting after meeting and said this, and the whole room was behind me like they were here today. So that's a criminal act, in my opinion, where you have not included this in any of your reports until the very last part, because I think you probably get a little scared about it. So I want none of the above. Thank you.
Thank you.
There's also a state law for police substations must be nearby for certain facilities for safety. And Napomo has three distinct gangs, and we basically have one sheriff and 26 for the entire area. So please consider the magnitude of what you've heard here today and keep the park rural. And also Griffith Park in L.A., they have the zoo, the Gene Autry Museum, the golf course, the trains, and on and on and on. And it was just for hiking and equestrian use. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Barbara Berlinghier, and she is followed by Dan Woodson.
Hello. My name is Barbara Verlinger. I am a 30-year resident of Napomo. I see a lot of new faces here that we haven't seen in some of these meetings. I have been to probably 85% of the Napomo meetings, at which there were probably 90% of the people that attended were against building out the park, the full build-out, and they were ignored. I would propose that, I don't know how many people here live in Napomo up in the front, but I would suggest that you try driving down Taft at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Or five. It's impossible. Unless you're going to widen Taft to be four lanes, this is insane. I'm going to save most of my comments. A lot of the things were already addressed. I don't know about your survey. If we have 16,000 people in Napomo and only 500 answered, I would like to have one of those surveys. Thank you. I'll save the rest for December.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Berlinghier. Dan Woodson, and then one more time. Is Rudy, did he happen to come back in, Rudy Stoll? No? Okay. Mr. Woodson.
Good afternoon. My name is Dan Woodson. I am chair of the Napomo Traffic and Circulation Committee. And first off, I want to thank everybody for thanking a veteran. I really appreciate that. Anyway, I do have some concerns about the EIR, especially regarding traffic issues, and the way they're going to mitigate traffic congestion. I'm not going to go on about it. I'm going to say there's a problem. If you look in your agenda package, you'll see my concerns, and I'll be willing to bring this up in a lot more detail on the 18th. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Woodson. That concludes my request to speak from members of the public, so I'll close it to the public and bring it back to staff and the board. County Council?
Yes, Rita Neal, County Council. As you bring it back to staff and the board, you might want to think a little bit in terms of if you do decide to continue this, if there's any direction you'd like to give to staff today based on what you've heard and based on what you've read, so that when they come back with a supplemental staff report and perhaps different findings based on what we've received, they'll have a little bit more direction, just something to help us when we get to the next hearing if the board decides to continue it.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Neal. I'll lead off with the submittal we got yesterday afternoon from the Napomo Park Conservancy to address the issues certainly raised in that submittal. Also, a couple of questions that came up that I was curious about. There was reference made to trails and the potential loss of trails if the park is developed the way the master plan currently shows, a question about the oaks, and as I understand it, any oak removal would be a function of the development of roads that may or may not be needed to access the park area, so if you could be more specific about that issue, that would be good also.
Sure, Elizabeth Kavanaugh, County Park staff. As far as the loss of trails, our master plan is adding trails. It's more than doubling the amount of trails in that natural area, that almost 100 acres that is left in natural area. We're doubling the existing trails that are there. And as far as the oak loss, most of the oak loss will be on Osage Road, as Mr. Eby pointed out. Osage Road is currently built out to a 2/3 road standard. That's how we develop roads in the county. I have seen public works protect oak trees along roads before. I think they're getting more and more sensitive to that, and I'm hopeful. But as the EIR is to look at the worst-case scenario, that's why we have those impacts in there.
Very good. Thank you. Supervisor Meacham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kind of following along the same road that you were in terms of the oak tree issue, but I went down over the weekend, spent a couple hours walking the entire area. That's a beautiful park. I see a lot of incredible possibilities there, not to discount any of them. So the other question that I would like a little bit further explanation on is the issue of water. I know that there's a lot of turf currently, and I know in the report it talks about recycled water at some point. I don't know when that point would be and how that would be accomplished, so when we get into discussion about that later, I'd be happy to hear from you then. Thank you.
Okay. Supervisor Teixeira.
Thank you, Chairman Patterson. Just a couple answers for questions that were asked on your question regarding the road and the oak trees. I did have a conversation with Public Works on Monday, and I asked the question, could the road be divided? Because the way it is now, Osage goes down, there's a very steep bank with the large oaks along that bank. And I asked Public Works, could the road be divided and then go around the backside of the oaks and come down so you don't have road parallel this way? That's a possibility that can be taken a look at, and we will look at that aspect as we get down the road. Supervisor Meacham's questions regarding water, Deputy Director Black and I have had the conversation about using recycled water. There is a water management plan funded by NCSD that Mr. Caruso and Chuck Stevenson are going to be working on right now, and that question's been asked to them to put in the purple pipes and allow the park to be using recycled water to water the turf and managed areas. So just a couple of aspects that we're looking at.
Very good. Thank you, Supervisor Teixeira. Any other question or comments from my colleagues? Supervisor Gibson? Do you have a question?
I'll defer to the
No, okay. Go ahead. Yes. Supervisor Teixeira.
Comments on some of the things that were said. Mrs. Miller's comment about parent involvement, I think, is very, very true. But the thing is, having raised five kids in Napomo and being involved in the rec center, there's no better place to have them and have control and have them watching you watching them, whether it's there or it's the high school or whatever you're doing. I think parent involvement in the whole country is at a loss. You know, and I can't say that enough after having served 4 years in the school board and seeing and going to activities and not seeing parents there and having to give up things that we wanted to do to go to our kids because it's so important that they see you there to support them. So I agree with your point. And I think the rec center actually promotes that because the family's there, the whole family's there. And I know that when my kids were playing sports, the little ones were outside playing or they were in an activity that was being led by the rec center people. I think it's very important that you have family involvement, and I think this is the kind of place that promotes it. Having lived in the community, it'll be 49 years in January, the places that we had for open space and where we rode horses and stuff, I look out in the audience and know where a lot of these people live, are living in these areas right now. So, I mean, we've lost a vast majority of the open space to ride in. But saying that, we've also not had the recreation capabilities and the recreation resources that we need for a community. We're very lacking in that in Napomo. I can remember when I was a kid, as Dana's school was the only resource for miles. You know, and they had basic playground and basic ball fields. As a community's grown, we need more and more of these activities, and we need more and more places for these kids to do these things. The other thing that I would like to ask Commander Taylor about, when the rec center was originally proposed in the middle of the park, and I had this conversation with former Under Sheriff Basti, we offered the proposition to the Sheriff's Department to locate the substation there. And I don't know if that conversation has been if you've had it with them or with the sheriff, but that was one of the options of putting it in the center of the park and having the substation there on county property and not having to lease an additional facility for the Sheriff's Department. So that'd be something I'd like to hear back from you on. We talked about recycled water, and I, like Ms. Kavanaugh said, the trails in the Napomo Park right now, the area that we're looking at developing and putting sports fields in, you do see some activity, some equestrian activity there, but the most of the equestrian activity that I see being involved in the park is they come in the backside through the nature garden, they come up through the Cesar Chavez garden, and right up through the oak woodlands. And that part is not going to be disturbed. And as she said, those trails are going to be enhanced. This project goes back more than 10 years, and somebody said earlier that, you know, this is something that I've tried to push down the throats of the people in Napomo. Well, this started before my tenure. I was asked by then-supervisor Dana School to enhance the park and make it bigger and make it better for all the community. So I think some of those things need to come out, and people need to understand the whole process here and where we've been and where we're going. Yes, we're looking at a 20-year plan. I hope that I'm around in 20 years to see the fruits of our labor and see the things that are done, and my grandkids and maybe my great-grandkids will be around to enjoy this. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Teixeira. Any other comments from staff or from the board? One quick question for Ms. Kavanaugh. The trails that are designed to be constructed, will they be multiple-use trails? Is that the plan, or are they use-specific?
Yes, multi-use trails.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Well, what's the pleasure of my colleagues? Supervisor Teixeira?
Chairman Patterson, I support the master plan and the EIR the way it's presented by staff, but I would ask that we move for continuance to the 18th of December so County Council can get all the questions answered and we can come back and make a full and complete decision.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, moved and seconded that we continue this item to a date certain, December 18th. I can do that with a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you all for coming this morning and staying into the afternoon, and we'll hopefully see you back on December 18th for a decision. We are, let me survey my colleagues here. Ms. Neal, how much time would you estimate for closed session?
I would estimate about 35 minutes today.
Which would barely get it done in time to come back. How about if we hold closed session after our afternoon session? Is everyone in agreement?
No.
Well,
let's eat lunch and have closed session.
Let's just go.
Yeah.
Let's just do it.
Do you want to?
Yeah.
All right.
Are you going to open
we'll
public comment?
Yeah. We'll adjourn to closed session, but first I want to open it to the public for comment on closed session. I have no request to speak, so we'll adjourn to closed session. Reconvene here at 1:40.
Thank you.
'Thank you for your patience. We were in closed session and wanted to get that wrapped up before coming back into open session. Ms. Neal, would you like to report out of closed session, please?
Thank you, Rita Neal, your county counsel. The board did meet in closed session and no reportable action was taken.
It's not that we don't do anything in closed session. It's just that no reportable action was taken. as Ms. Neal pointed out. Madam Clerk, would you read the next item, please?
Item number 19, hearings to consider 7 proposals to establish new agricultural preserves and to amend existing agricultural preserves.
Very good. Thank you. Ms. Carroll?
Right. Thank you. We have Terry Waller as our project manager for all of these projects today. There are 7 of them, as the clerk noted, and Terry will be making the presentations today. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Waller, would you take us through these one at a time, please?
Certainly. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Terry Waller, planning staff. The first item is a proposal by Patrick Nagano Trust to establish an agricultural preserve to enable the applicant to enter into a land conservation contract later in the year. The project site consists of approximately 21 acres within the agriculture land use category. It's located at 1675 Nagano Road, and this is approximately 2,700 feet northeast of the city of Morro Bay in the Estero planning area. The landowner is applying under the small specialized farm provision that was added to the rules of procedure in 2007. The applicant's property complies with the eligibility criteria of this section with approximately 18 acres of irrigated Class 1 soil and a half an acre of irrigated Class 2 soil. It's planted in an avocado orchard. The appropriate minimum parcel size for the agricultural preserve is 20 acres, and the appropriate minimum term of contract is 10 years based on the site's location within 1 mile of an urban reserve line, the city of Morro Bay. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee, as well as the Planning Commission, recommend approval of this request to establish an agricultural preserve. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Good. Thank you. Any questions from my colleagues? I see none. I'll open it to the public. I have no request to speak on this item, so I'll close it to the public and bring it back to the board.
I'll move staff's recommendation.
Second.
Moved and seconded staff's recommendation on this item. Roll call, please.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And the appropriate minimum term of contract is 20 years. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee, as well as the Planning Commission, recommend approval of this request to establish an agricultural preserve. Concludes my presentation.
Okay. Questions from my colleagues? Seeing none, I'll open it to the public. I have no request to speak on this item, so I'll close it to the public, bring it back to the board for action.
Move staff's recommendation.
Second.
Moved and seconded staff's recommendation. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Mr. Waller?
The next item is a proposal by Dave Colmar to establish an agricultural preserve. The project site consists of approximately 64 acres within the agriculture land use category. It is located at 1545 Willow Creek Road, approximately 3 miles northwest of the intersection of Willow Creek Road and Highway 46, and approximately 4 miles northwest of the urban reserve line of Templeton. The site is in the Adelaida planning area. This site consists primarily of gently sloping lands that are planted extensively in irrigated vineyard. The property meets the eligibility criteria in the rules of procedure with approximately 30 acres of irrigated vineyard on Class 2 and 4 irrigated soils. The appropriate minimum parcel size is 40 acres due to the primary use of the property for irrigated vineyard. And the appropriate minimum term of the contract is 20 years because the site is located more than 1 mile from the Templeton Urban Reserve line. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee, as well as the Planning Commission, recommend approval of this request to establish an agricultural preserve.
Okay, thank you. I'll open it to the public. No request to speak on this item, so I'll bring it back. Close it to the public, bring it back to the board for action.
Move staff's recommendation.
Second.
Moved and seconded staff's recommendation on this item. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes. Mr. Waller?
The next item is a proposal by Jorian Clark to establish an agricultural preserve based on the protection of open space and wildlife habitat resources as provided for in the Williamson Act. This will enable the applicant to enter into a land conservation contract later in the year with the appropriate land use restrictions. The property consists of approximately 634.5 acres within the rural lands land use category. It's located at 9017 Goldie Lane, approximately 2,500 feet north of Calf Canyon Road, or excuse me, highway, and approximately 4 miles due north of the community of Creston. 4 miles due south of the community of Creston. The site is in the Elpomar planning area. A section of the Williamson Act and the Rules of Procedure also allow applicants to apply for agriculture preserves where the property has high value as wildlife habitat. This property with its approximately 634.5 acres of moderately to steeply sloping natural terrain with coastal scrub, mixed chaparral, chamise, red shank, and chaparral prevalent throughout the property. These plant communities are listed as sensitive under the California Natural Diversity Database. Special status species, wildlife, and plant species considered to be species of great conservation need have been documented in similar habitats in the vicinity of this project, the property, and are therefore expected to inhabit this property. The property also functions as a wildlife corridor along the Werewolf Creek, which runs through the property. The property meets the intent of this section of the Rules of Procedure as well as the Williamson Act based on the Department of Fish and Game's review letter, which is in your packet. The appropriate minimum parcel size is 320 acres and the appropriate minimum term of contract is 20 years. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee as well as the Planning Commission recommend approval of this request to establish an agricultural preserve. That concludes my presentation.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Waller. I have a request from Mr. Wilton Webster. Are you here, Mr. Webster?
Yes.
There's no reference to a particular item. I was looking for one. Is there one in particular you want to speak to that I may have missed? Would you?
It's actually item G, Mr. Chairman.
And would that be the last?
Yes.
One? Okay.
I spoke with him
earlier. Yours still needs to come up. I just wanted to make sure we didn't miss you. So if you'll take a seat and wait a moment, we'll call you up when the next item comes up. All right. So no request to speak on this item. I'll bring it back to the board. Supervisor Meacham.
Before I move, I noticed that there was a considerable amount of discussion on this one, and it appears to me that they finally resolved what their concerns were, but can you just quickly tell me one of the, I guess one of the biggest issues was relative to lands coming under contract without ag production. Is that fallen out of
I think you just hit the nail on the head. To be very brief and
request to speak on this item, I'll close it to the public, bring it back to the board. Supervisor Gibson,
I just wanted to comment. I was on the Ag Preserve Review Committee when that first one came through. If I remember correctly, that was the first time in the state that that particular provision of the Williamson Act, certainly, obviously, the first time in this county. It's basically a voluntary conservation program taken on by a landowner. This land will end up being rezoned to open space, if I remember correctly.
That's correct.
And I think we should look at this with some pride. I do understand the philosophic discussion, but this landowner's got some rather special habitat there, and this is an interesting way to help preserve it.
Right, absolutely. And as was pointed out in the staff report, it is adjacent to similar type habitat that does have the species of concern on it, so it's assumed that this is viable habitat as well. And so being in the 5th District, I'll move approval of staff's recommendation on this item.
Second.
Okay. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Waller?
The next item is a proposal by John Philbrick to alter and expand the boundaries of an existing ag preserve and contract by adding approximately 160 acres, which will result in a total of 463 acres. The property consists of approximately 160 acres that are within the agriculture land use category. It is located on the northern side of Park Hill Road, approximately 3/4 mile east of the intersection of River Road and Park Hill Road, and approximately 3 miles due north of Poza. It's also approximately 12.5 miles east of the community of Santa Margarita. The site is in the Los Palitos planning area. The subject parcel consists of gently to steeply sloping rangeland interspersed with chaparral, brush, and oak trees. It's quite dry. It has been used for rangeland over the years by this same family, and it was recently purchased. The 160-acre property would not be eligible for a separate contract because it does not meet the current eligibility requirements of an agricultural preserve or agricultural rangeland preserve, since it has less than 100 acres of land described in the soils report as well-suited as rangeland. It is also less than 320 acres in size, which is, again, a change that we made to the rules of procedure last year. However, the site does qualify for addition to the existing ag preserve and land conservation contract according to the following provision in the rules of procedure, which states that a property owner under contract who acquires adjacent parcels of any size may add this land by amendment of the existing agricultural preserve and contract. The contract amendment is to recognize the remaining term of the original contract, but in no event less than 10 years. The existing property subject to contract includes approximately 303 acres of land with 100 acres moderately suited as rangeland. So this addition of land will help bolster that existing contract and increase the amount of available rangeland for that agricultural preserve and contract. The appropriate minimum term is the same as the existing preserve and contract that the land's being added to, which is 320 acres, and the remaining term of the existing contract is 10 years, which is the appropriate term for the added land. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission recommend approval of this request to amend the Agricultural Preserve to add land.
Okay,
that concludes my comments.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Waller. Now, is this the item that Mr. Webster wanted to speak to, or is it the next one, the last one?
It's actually item G, which is Robert Gerringer.
Okay, very good. Thank you for that. I'll open it to the public. Have no request to speak on this item, so I'll close it to the public, bring it back to the board. And again, this is a conservation easement in the 5th District. I'll move staff's recommendation.
Seconded.
Okay, moved and seconded. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And then the final item?
Item F is a proposal by ATIA Foundation to alter and expand the boundaries of an existing agricultural preserve by adding approximately 40 acres. This will result in a total of 7,572 acres in the agricultural preserve. The site is located within the agriculture and rural lands land use categories. I should probably note that the rural lands designation will be changed through a general plan amendment to provide restrictive zoning. It will be changed to agriculture. This is located in a very remote area. It's actually west of Lake Nacimiento, and it encompasses the southernmost bend in the Nacimiento River. It's approximately 3.5 miles west of Oak Shores Village area. The site is located in the Nacimiento planning area. So Nacimiento Agricultural Preserve Number 10 was originally established in amendment to add land. And that concludes my presentation for this item.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Waller. And again, to point out that by itself it wouldn't qualify, but being added to an already existing preserve, the maximum or minimum acreage requirement is met. Mm-hmm. I'll open it to the public. I have no request to speak on this item, so I'll close it to the public and bring it back to the board for action.
Move staff's recommendation. I believe, Mr. Webster, you're looking for the next one, I believe.
Right.
Yeah. And I'll second Mr. Meacham's motion with the simple comment. This is, again, an extraordinary private conservation effort that's been going on there. The ATIAs and the ATIA Foundation are low-key, but through a very interesting partnership with the Land Conservancy and through just an extraordinary conservation ethic, they have accomplished remarkable things in this part of the county.
Exceeding what, 7,000 acres?
7,600, over 7,600 acres with this action, yeah.
Very good. Thank you. Madam Clerk, roll call.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes. Okay. Mr. Waller?
The final item is a proposal by Robert Gerringer to alter the boundaries of an agricultural preserve, rescind an existing land conservation contract, and enter into a new land conservation contract, which will be brought to you later in the year. And this is to reflect a revised property boundaries from a lot line adjustment. It's actually a very minor adjustment. The property consists of approximately 131 acres that are located within the agriculture land use category at 8530 Vineyard Drive, approximately 7 miles northwest of Templeton. The site is in the rural Adelaida planning area. The application to amend the agricultural preserve boundaries is necessary because the applicant has applied for this lot line adjustment, and this involves less than 2,000 square feet. It involves a little driveway encroachment on the southern property to the south. The lot line adjustment is consistent with the requirements of the Williamson Act and the rules of procedure that govern adjustments and changes in the legal descriptions of contracts. Because the rules of procedure have changed substantially since the property entered the program in 1991, we did reevaluate it and determined that the property remains consistent with the current eligibility standards. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission recommend approval of the amended Agricultural Preserve with a minimum parcel size of 160 acres and a 20-year term of contract. That concludes my presentation.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Waller. With that, I'll open it to the public. And now, Mr. Webster, you have an opportunity to comment on this item, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I came here to protect my land, and I guess, according to the gentleman at the table, I don't have to. I thought that this... I just got a notice in the mail, and it sounded to me like they wanted to carve off a piece of the Williamson land across the street from me and make it commercial. Now, apparently that's not the case. It's still going to be Williamson land. So why is it necessary?
Okay. Any other comments, Mr. Webster, and then I'll have your question answered.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Waller, would you like to speak to Mr. Webster's question?
Certainly. There is a lot line adjustment that was proposed by the landowner. They wish to pick up, they have a driveway that runs across the creek, the south western corner of the property that shows in the exhibit. It's right there. And their driveway encroaches on the property to the south. And the landowner to the south did not want to offer them an easement, although I did suggest that. And so a condition of purchasing this property was to resolve the issue with the access. And so because of the property owners to the south wish to, they just wish to sell that chunk of land and not have any what they perceive to be liability issues with the driveway. So this is really about a very simple matter. It's about a little driveway encroachment. It's going to be resolved appropriately through a lot line adjustment. Unfortunately, the agricultural preserve and the contract boundaries also have to be amended. So they have to go through this process basically just because of the lot line adjustment. And we explored many other possible remedies, and they didn't work. So we ended up doing it this way.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Waller, for that explanation. Thank you for coming in, Mr. Webster. Appreciate it. So I'll bring it back. Close it to public comment, bring it back to the board, and Supervisor Meacham.
I just want to make sure Mr. Webster's question is answered. Are you satisfied with the answer, sir?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. With that, I'll move staff's recommendation.
Second.
Moved and seconded staff's recommendation on this item. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes. And
through the design bid-build process and approval of a sole source agreement for professional engineering services with Corollo Engineering in the amount of $3,382,504 for the Los Osos Project Water Recycling Facility, Los Osos 2nd District.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Clerk. And Mr. Waddell, will you be giving the staff presentation on this item?
Yes. Good afternoon, Chairman, members of the board. I'm John Waddell with the Public Works Department. I'm going to pass some hard copies of the PowerPoint down. If you can excuse my labored speech. I'm kind of a slight cold, but I'll try to speak as clearly as I can. So I'll just get right into it. Just first start with some background. Again, there's a few items in here with direction on design, on the contracting or the project delivery method. Early in the wastewater project process in 2007, we received board direction to pursue design-build contracting as a project selection strategy. And really the intent there, and it was in the written strategy recommendations, is for technology selection. So it was primarily for the collection system and treatment facility processes. And really it was addressing the uncertainties in the planning level cost estimates of the different technologies for collection or treatment. And so, where the engineers are doing some basic level cost estimating, you're recognizing that having multiple technologies on the table for competition then allowed that those cost estimates to be refined. But as we move forward over the last several years, there's been a number of project developments that have prompted reconsideration of that strategy. Kind of one of the primary ones is the coastal development permit that went through a lengthy process both here at our planning commission to your board and ultimately to the coastal development permit, which effectively narrowly defined the project technologies both for collection and treatment. And so what that effectively did is design build was no longer really a strategy for choosing a technology. But we continue to move forward because there are other cost and schedule and overall policy considerations that were decision factors on design build. Also on the project financing, we've received low interest loans from USDA and State Water Board. Originally, again in 2007 with the policy, the design build legislation that was on the table was Government Code 5956, which did not allow you could not use that code section with state funds, and you were required to have private financing as part of that. But with the low interest loans that we've received, that private financing is not really competitive, and the financing we did receive for the project is a much much lower cost for the community overall. Public contract code 20133, which is the design build authorizing legislations that we have been moving forward under, was not even around at that time. It was passed in 2008, and so that's what created the legal authorities for counties to do design build. However, as we move forward, we have identified some potential risk issues there. The first one here is that it doesn't really align very well with the State Water Board's funding guidelines, which is what this treatment facility or water recycling facility is being funded by. Some of the other potential legal and risk issues that have been identified as we work through council are listed here. Many of these can be addressed, but as we move forward, especially in this last year, in our focused efforts as we really embarked on our design build contracting and worked with county council to identify these risks, and also outreach to other agencies that have used this code section, and done our due diligence, we've really concluded that the risks may outweigh the benefits of doing design build. And just kind of going quickly down the list, other agencies have used this code. They've done it, and there's several, about half a dozen agencies have used this code over the last few years on about a dozen projects. And because the language in the code isn't clear, they've done different ways of doing their contracting. And so there's not a clear precedent. There's also, because it's a new code, there's no judicial precedent. And, none of these have gone to any court for any type of ruling. If we were to take the conservative path with the literal interpretation, it appears that there are a few design build benefits remaining. The technology, again, as I said before, with the coastal permit is narrowly defined, so there's not that technology selection benefit. The schedule really was the largest potential benefit, but due to those uncertainties of funding and or litigation and coastal issues, there's actually kind of a large range of uncertainty of if you follow the design build path, and it could end up taking longer than low bid, and so there's some uncertainties there. Again, the codes, the low bid method of contracting, well-established code, long history of legal precedents and decisions, and it's really well-charted territory, whereas this code section is really untested. With low bid, there is obviously a very large pool of qualified contractors. With design build, for one, there's less contractors that are experienced with design build, and then the kind of the industry standard of design build contracting is to further limit that pool to is kind of a short list, if possible, of contractors, and so you're significantly reducing competition in the interest and in kind of the best practice of getting highly qualified design builders. And so on the cost considerations, in this case, we really believe that low bid contracting, is cost competitive with design build. Design build industry will say that they have some cost benefits, and there potentially are when you're looking at a very complex type of a design and contracting process where the designers and the contractors can work together. But on something like on a treatment plan of this nature, that's on an open land and is a relatively straightforward process, the design and construction parameters are well known, and a qualified designer will be able to develop an efficient design. And beyond the design considerations, the work is still the work, and you still have the costs for materials and labor. So based on these reasons, Public Works has developed today's recommendations, and it's for directing Public Works to proceed with low bid contracting under the applicable public contract code section for the water recycling facility. And then it's the other two recommendations for waiving the board policy and approving a sole source agreement with Corollo Engineers is to essentially continue Corollo's current efforts on working on the facility design, which is the logical conclusion. And I'm going to cover that topic now in the next few slides. So the first thing is to waive board policy for an RFP process and approve a sole source procurement. And basically, the RFP, a request for proposal process, it's a 3 to 5 month process. It's release an RFP, request proposals. The selection of an engineering design firm is based on qualifications under this code section. And I just want to note on the slide, it says government code section, and that's correct. In the staff report, it was noted as public contract code. In the body of the staff report. But it's public. It's government code section 4525 and continues. It's qualifications-based selection, and then after you've selected the most qualified firm, then costs are the price is negotiated. In this case, Corollo is the most qualified and likely to be selected under that process. And sole source is allowed as a policy decision by your board, and then it avoids the wasted time and costs of going through that RFP process. As far as the justification and Corollo's qualifications, these are discussed in detail in the board letter. That was reviewed with County Council, and I'll just go through them quickly. These multiple reasons, but they are a well-recognized firm in the U.S. for designing. Their whole field is water, drinking water and wastewater. They've been doing work for the county for a number of years and have always provided a high quality of service. Extensive experience on the project from its beginning, and they've been working on working with us for multiple project approvals, permitting with through the EIR, coastal permit, Department of Public Health, engaged and up to speed. This agreement before you today is for those final design services. It's approximately $3.2 million with then 5% contingency fund. There is in their scope potential ongoing services for services during construction, which is responding to requests for RFIs and material submittals, but that's subject to future board approval and would be and after the final design would be would review that level of effort, refine those costs if needed, and would come back to your board. So today's recommendation is for the final design phase. Just some next steps on the treatment facility or water recycling facility process, pending board approval. We need to complete a value engineering process, and that's where we bring in a separate independent engineering firm to review the design and identify potential cost savings. We need to procure a construction management firm. So we'll be releasing requests for proposals for both of those services in the next couple months, and then bringing agreements back to your board for approval, and then ultimately bidding out the contract. Expect with the design schedule in the agreement, expect to have final design and go out to bid in approximately August 2013, and if we stay on that schedule, that would essentially this time next year would be and would have contracts in place and officially be starting construction. And I do want to highlight the treatment cost portion of the project budget. The overall budget is in the staff report. So the existing agreement that Corolla has been operating under for the preliminary design, then there's this pending final design agreement, the second line. There's county staff costs, a subtotal about $5 million. The unallocated, that is the budget for the value engineering, the construction management, design services during construction, and then construction itself. The site constraints of the Giacomazzi property and some of the coastal conditions. The original treatment plant estimates in 2007 and based on some other potentially using other sites were around $25 million. Corolla's initial, as they've got into this design, there's potential that those may increase somewhat. I'm working with them to keep those costs down, to stay within that $31 million. But I do want to highlight, the bottom line there. There are approximately $24 million in project contingencies and unused funds from the collection system portion of the project. So, we have an overall budget for this treatment facility of $36 million, and there's an additional $24 million available in contingencies. That concludes the presentation. I'm happy to answer questions.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Waddell. I appreciate that presentation. Are there any questions for John at this juncture? I have none, so I'll open it to the public. I do have one request to speak, perhaps more coming. Julie Tacker, followed by Richard Margetson.
Thanks. I am Julie Tacker from Los Osos, and first I'd like to speak to the staff report and the agreement for engineering services that was only available at the clerk's office. And I'd be curious how many of you, supervisors, took a look at that. Was it provided to you in some other form? Because while it was lengthy, it wasn't unusually lengthy when we're talking about contract documents. And even earlier in your staff reports today, you have voluminous reports that are available to the public and yourselves electronically. So I took the time to go to the clerk's office and I looked through this agreement. What was glaring to me was how not shovel-ready this project is. The final design will not be complete until August of next year. Did we somehow miss that we were going to build a sewer plant, that now we've burned up so much time that we can't go out? We couldn't possibly go out to bid and get competitive bids. Yes, I agree, Carollo is concrete tanks were headed north and south, are now running east and west. I'd like an explanation. What is it that we have to redesign the wheel for this plant? We haven't procured the site. It seems like we had some trouble yesterday at the subdivision review board. There's so much more, and I'm just really sorry for Los Osos that we didn't get a competitive process. Mr. Waddell suggests that the 3 to 5 months for an RFP process, you just approved a contract in March, 3 to 5 months ago, for the $900,000 that Carollo's been working under thus far.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Tacker. Richard Margetson, followed by Gwen Taylor.
Richard Margetson. First of all, I have to note that there's two sheriff's deputies here for four members of the public. Wow. I guess if you can't, you know, with qualifications debate, I guess you have to try to intimidate. We called this. We knew their design build was never going to happen. Public comments were given in the past. Go back to the tapes. Now, by delaying and delaying and delaying, you already started the collection system. We kept hearing, oh, we'll do that first, and then we'll start the design of the thing. It basically set up the excuses that are in this report. That's all that was done. You wonder why the community of Los Osos and the community and the community CSD does not trust county staff. It's because manipulations of the process just like this. 2007 design build, oh, that was going to be the way we would go. We would save money. Now you've got all the list. Why didn't you start this 8 months ago? Why couldn't this have been started 8 months ago? There's no reason it couldn't have. Now you're going to give, you're going to hand out a sole source contract. Waive board adopted contract for service policies requiring requests for proposals for services over $25,000. There's a reason there's that limit. Now you're going to just sole source a contract for $3.38 million? There's nothing in this staff report to even indicate whether those are these costs are competitive with what we may get from another contractor. There's no comparison. How do we know that another consulting firm might not be lower than $3.38 million? And when you add what they've already been contracted for, we're up to $4.3 million for design of a, like Julie said, supposedly shovel-ready project. Go back and look on county projects, the list. See how many sole source contracts have been given out in total over probably, let's go back 20 years. See how many sole source contracts have been given out for over $3 million? And look at how many of them have been given out for Los Osos. Just to manipulate the process and take the community out of the discussion. We don't know whether we're getting a good deal here or a bad deal just because it's Carollo and it's local. We don't know that another engineering firm in this town, in this community, or this county couldn't have done the same work. Carollo's not the only one on the face of the earth that's familiar with Los Osos.
Thank you, Mr. Margetson. Gwen Taylor.
Good afternoon. My name is Gwen Taylor, and I'm truly, truly amazed and flabbergasted at the actions that are being taken today when we in Los Osos were assured at the time of the TAC hearings that this would never happen. Heaven forbid. The engineering firm of Carollo has put their nose under the tent time and time again. Not only did they do a sloppy job when they were doing the reports for the planning of water usage in the county. They combined Los Osos, Morro Bay, and Cayucas in the same water basin. It took the public time and time again at the RAC to bring it to their attention that this is not a fact. Finally, they changed it in a report that they finally put out. Corollo Engineering has been said is not the only engineering firm in this county or in this state. They have had one, two, three problem developments that are in this county alone. Why in the world would this board want to hire someone that has already created problems? And you don't even...
I had any questions on this matter, but I would observe that the justification for the change in strategy and the justification for the approval of the sole source contract are well documented in the staff report and in the presentation today, notwithstanding the expected comments that we received from the public here. I do have a couple of questions for Mr. Waddell. One is in terms of the Coastal Commission permit, what leeway does the design firm have in terms of designing within the envelope of the parcel that was identified? Is that an issue that's before them, or is it more constrained by the Coastal Commission?
Well, the project is very constrained as far as the building envelope. There's no leeway to go outside that envelope. We started with essentially a 40-acre parcel, and then after identifying sensitive resource areas and setbacks from those, purchased a approximately 25-acre parcel, of which another 8 acres was sensitive resource and setbacks, and really have effectively about a 13-acre area to work in. And there's another little area that's kind of off to the side.
And within that envelope and within the specified technologies, the designer is free to maneuver things around.
They are within some specific parameters as far as building orientation and other,
very good,
other parameters.
Okay. And then as to the matter of issuing this as a sole source contract, what sense do we have of the competitiveness of this price versus what else we might expect if we were going out RFP? Right.
Well, we compare prices with, engineering costs are kind of a factor of anticipated construction costs. And, they vary based on the complexity. So, with a treatment plant and more complex costs, you're looking at the 12 to 15% or more of construction cost range. And, I think that the bottom line is that with their it's time and materials, and their staff are up to speed and in the process and are going to be able to be most efficient in picking up where they're at and getting to the end.
Okay, very good. And Brady, with a motion, when comments from colleagues are done.
Thank you. There are a couple of more questions, Supervisor Gibson. Supervisor Meacham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John, in the staff report, it talks about since initiation of work and project in the 2006, wasn't here in 2006, but was that preliminary design, was that a competitive bidding process?
The preliminary design was just approved at the beginning of this year.
Right, but I mean initially, way back when this first started, was there any type of suggestion that it would be a competitive bidding process for this?
Not in 2006.
Okay. No. And then I guess my other question is regarding the 20%, the 20% that has been completed to date. If we were to go out to competitive bidding, that 20% of whatever has been designed in the preliminary design could be at risk in terms of another designer. Is that
Yes, I'd say so. Yeah.
So we'd be starting again.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay, and any further questions, Supervisor Meacham? One more quickly. There's some reference made to the scheduling, and as I understand it, Mr. Waddell, we have a couple of years of constructing the collection system, and during that period, the wastewater treatment facility will be constructed. We don't actually need that for 2 or 3 years.
Correct. Not till 2015, yes.
And so the scheduling issue is not an issue.
Yes, we're working to have the collection system, the treatment plant done in conjunction with when the collection system is done, and within just a few months of that.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Supervisor Gibson.
With that, I'll move staff's recommendation.
Okay.
Second.
Moved and seconded staff's recommendation. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham? Mr.
Teixeira? Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes. With that, we'll adjourn to November 13th.